Blog Talk Radio.
I can't remember anything that happened before 2 weeks ago.
October the 15th, 2013, and this is The Last Word with Michael Lawson.
I can't remember anything that happened before 2 weeks ago.
What the heck is the story here? I don't understand why we were off the air.
Well,
but anyway,
one of those like last week when we had a
faux bubble. Yeah, matter of fact, you know, my computer had, I called up my daughter. She says, well, you know, it shows me that you're going to be on air in 56 minutes. I said, why is it showing I'm going to be on the air in 2 hours and 56 minutes? So we were like, the computer didn't update the time.
Oh.
Give me a break. Wait a minute. But this is Microsoft.
What?
How come Microsoft didn't update. Oh, maybe it was, who was supposed to update it? The Microsoft product, right? I mean, so they can blame the president for not having healthcare working? I want everybody to listen to it. Just listen to the first line from this song.
I can't remember anything that happened before 2 weeks ago.
This is what the mayor of Toronto is saying. I can't remember anything, anytime. Forget 2 weeks ago. Because I was in a drunken stupor, a crack-induced drunken stupor.
Yeah. You know, every time, I feel kind of sorry for the guy.
You feel kind of?
He's sitting there dragging it out as a special on TV. He needs to just go away.
No, they're having their own show. The brother announced that they're going to have their own show. Yes.
You got to be kidding.
No, they're going to have their own show.
This is pathetic.
They're going to have their own show. And it's called Ford Nation. That's what it's called. They announced that today. And if I could find the...
Again, this guy, every time they talk to him, even the other day in the middle of the you know, the hearing, the guy said, have you bought illegal drugs?
Well,
and he goes, yeah.
Well, let's...
It's just unbelievable. Why is the guy in office?
Now, for all those people who live under a rock, we're going to go over some of the stuff that this man has said. Now, this is the Toronto mayor, Rob Ford. This is what he said to newspapers and to the listening public, not just in Toronto, but worldwide.
With today's announcement, I know I embarrassed everyone in this city, and I will be forever sorry. There's only one person to blame for this, and that is myself. I know that admitting my mistake was the right thing to do, and I feel like 1,000 pounds have been lifted off my shoulders. I can't explain how difficult this was to do. I hope that nobody has to go through what I have gone through. I know what I did was wrong, and admitting it was the most difficult and embarrassing thing I have ever had to do. Folks, I have nothing left to hide. I love my job, I love this city, I love saving taxpayers' money, and I love being your mayor. I want to be crystal clear to every single person, these mistakes will never, ever, ever happen again. I kept this from my family, especially my brother Doug, my staff, my council colleagues, because I was embarrassed and ashamed. To the residents of Toronto, I know I have let you down, and I can't do anything else but apologize. I apologize, and I'm so sorry.
You know, Mike, what really bothers me about these guys is the We're a human race, and we have compassion and stuff.
A human race. Is that what you said? We're a human race?
Yeah. and these guys, with their, you know, whenever they get caught doing anything wrong,
do they
ask for forgiveness, and they throw themselves on the mercy of the people. Oh, please, I'll never, ever, 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 ever.
Not in this
ever,
lifetime, ever, ever.
Again. You know, but when anybody else does anything wrong,
anybody else.
They are the first to point the big judging finger of God upon them. They wanted to impeach Clinton as a lying adulterer. Oh, gross. Yeah. They will go after viciously anyone. And one of their favorite targets of society are the poor people who
do
something wrong.
What do you mean we have poor people here?
So poor people obviously are no good at working. They're obviously no good at saving money. They can't contribute as much to society as a multi-billionaire when he drops some change on the ground and it tinkles down on people. And the one that gets me the most is when they do something wrong, like a poor person caught with crack, say, even just drunk driving or, you know, anything else. When they do something wrong, like say they were drunk and blew their friend's face off.
Who are you accusing of blowing the face off?
A poor person will pay the ultimate price. They will be drug kicking and screaming through the penitentiary yard, you know, gang raped in the holding cells, and then thrown into prison for as long as the absolute maximum sentencing possible.
You know, I saw that story.
And I think it's unbelievable that these people who are so non-compassionate, so non-caring, so non, you know, human, that they want to cut funding. They don't want to hear anything about it. They want these judges can't even have discretion anymore. They want maximum sentences for everything. If you're caught with any drug, you go straight to jail. You don't pass
go.
Pass, you know.
Go. Do not collect.
And it's just, but when they do something wrong, oh, please, please help us. You know, it's wrong. You know, they even had that poor guy who got his face blown off go out and apologize for embarrassing Cheney. Remember that? Sorry, I embarrassed the vice president by getting in the way of his gun. You know, but if a poor person did that, there'd be no compassion, no trial, no nothing. They just would be going to jail. And this guy, you know, it goes to character again. You want to talk about character? You know, they tried to get they called Clinton everything from a murderer of Vince Foster to, you know, an adulterer to everything else, and wanted to get rid of him. They tried to impeach him 50 times, and they finally got him on one charge of lying. But that was enough. Let's get rid of him. You know, Obama's not even an American. He's evil because of the dark skin.
Oh, yeah, well we know he's a terrorist.
So, but when these guys go, oh, no, please, just I won't do anything again. I lied to everyone. I lied to the public. I lied to my staff. I lied to my family. You know, Obama, good guy. Give me a chance. And that's the point. Everybody makes mistakes every once in a while. Everybody has a dark side. Everybody lies, does something. But there's no chance for a poor person. But a person in power with money? You accidentally drove the economy off the cliff?
Off the cliff?
By pocketing all the money and just, you know, raping people over their homes and everything. Oh, okay, we're sorry. Here's a slap on the wrist. Don't do it again. You know. When they do something wrong, no accountability. Forgiveness all around. Come on, understand. We're just human. Please. We erred, you know. When a poor person...
We were erroring because we were protecting you.
But this is why, especially, you know, minorities and things like that, get disgruntled by the two-tiered system in this country. Hell, it seems to be justice one way for some people and justice another way for other people. And this guy is a prime example. Even though it's Canada, it just goes to show you.
Now, I'm looking for this, and while you are talking, I'm going to bring this up because he has, you know what they have done today, and the council has removed some of his powers.
Well, they remove some of his body from the building and fire him. Go away.
Now, this is – I just heard this today.
Can't they have, like, a vote of no confidence or something?
Get
rid of it?
There is no way in Canada law to get rid of a mayor or anybody else,
no matter what,
unless they have been convicted in court and sentenced to jail.
Oh.
Can you believe that?
Wow. So, you know, no matter what, if he doesn't get caught and convicted, then he's okay.
Yes.
I mean, he can literally be filmed smoking crack and, you know.
He can be.
That's okay.
Well, but okay. You see, how do we know that was crack, which you weren't going to say?
Sorry,
what you going to say? No, yeah. He said it, but, you know, he can say, I was in a drunken stupor when I admitted that. And then what are you going to say? Yes. Well, we know he's been in a drunken stupor.
We should give him every chance in the world and break him. Maybe he can redeem himself and become a good person again. But how come Billy Bob Joe down on the corner
Billy
has to go
Bob,
to jail
Billy
7
Bob,
years, you know, for
the,
his crack?
The reason is because if you got a name Billy Bob, you don't deserve to get a second chance. That's one of the main things here.
That would be because, you know, I'm from the South and everybody down there had these double names.
Yeah.
Maybe it'd be something else out there like, you know, Def Jam Daddy or something.
I remember growing up, and I met the first person with a double name. I said, they didn't remember your first name? So they gave you a second name.
Amen.
And then they remembered it, so they said, it stuck? I mean, what is the story here? What is the story here? So, now,
some of them have double names. You know that?
Double.
Yeah,
Billy Bob
like,
Bob.
It'd be like Joanne Sue Ellen, you know, something like that. You'd be like, what?
Give me a break.
Because, you know, two names can be a single name, and then two names can be a single name. You know, so.
Oh, Bob.
Well, you can,
James.
Yeah.
James. Jimmy James. That's right. JJ. Is that what it is? Justin, is that what JJ is? Anyway,
Jonah Jameson is getting up for anybody.
We're not set yet, but we're gonna set this up where now I played you a few of the things that was said.
Now, Mike, why are we talking about Canada when America's on fire?
Well, no, America's not. Listen, this is a bunch of garbage. I'm not
Obama
even thinking about this.
The
these people are so, look, I'm so sick and tired, not of the regressive party. I'm sick and tired of these puny, punk butt Democrats.
Yeah.
They are punk butt. You know,
we've been tired of them
this
forever.
Job is not meant for you to have this job for life. This job is to help the American public to have a better life. You have given up millions and millions of dollars that you could have made in the private sector, despite what Rush Limbaugh says, despite what O'Reilly says, despite what that fool Haggerty Hannity says, that you could have made it a private sector to go into government work. Why? Because you wanted to make a difference. So don't tell me I'm afraid of losing my job if I don't go along with my standard bearer. This is, he passed something that they have been trying to pass for 80 years. First sign of someone shooting back at you. No, I shouldn't say the first sign. When you're in a war, you got to shoot back.
Right.
If you can't shoot back, claim some sort of injury.
Yeah.
Claim, conscientious objection.
Yeah.
This is a war here. And these people have been shooting freaking, not bazookas at you, nuclear weapons at you, and you want to spit at them.
Yeah.
I'm so sick and tired of these damn Democrats who aren't worth 2 cents, and at the first sign, second sign, or third sign, They're giving up. Oh, I might not get elected again. Well, you know what? Too damn bad, because the Republicans are going to be in office in another 15 or 20 years. There won't be any of them, despite whether or not you get out of office. They can't redistrict enough. They can't, because everybody is going to be moving in those districts.
Yeah.
So this is, let's look at the long view. Redistricting
you do, eventually demographics overwhelm the whole thing.
Absolutely. Demographics overwhelms the whole thing. And
there's also this other thing. It's called old age. Eventually,
they die.
Old white guys die. That's what happens.
They die.
It's a generational thing. No, but listen. These guys refuse to do their job and stand up because they want it to just be easy breezy, you know, champagne coasting. And this is another argument why we need term limits on these guys. They don't need to be worrying about staying there for 40 years. Okay, it shouldn't be a permanent. It's not a career.
They should have 12 years. That's all I give, 12 years.
You know,
that's it. Go get another damn job. Max 20 years. I mean, because you retire from a job in 20 years, why must you be there 40 years?
Yeah.
I mean, this is completely ludicrous.
We've got guys there to stay there literally until their legs were falling off. You know what I mean? We don't need that.
I mean, this is completely, but, you know.
It is not a royal position that you hold until death.
Heck no.
Get out of there.
But, you know, I'm almost there. Just wait a minute here.
Do the right thing.
We're getting off the track here, because this time
this country's been derailed for a long time.
Has to be spent on the Canadian mayor. I mean,
moron doesn't deserve our time.
No, he does. He has done everything in his power to replace Howard Stern as the world's mayor.
As the buffoon.
Yes. And what we're the position we're in right now is that we're gonna. I set up everything for people to understand what this mayor was doing and saying, and I now want to play, one more thing that he said before we get to the real things he said.
In a democracy, and on October 27th of 2014, I want the people of this great city to decide whether they want Rob Ford to be their mayor. Again, I sincerely apologize. God bless the people of Toronto. Thank you very much.
Evangelicals. When in doubt, invoke God.
The daggone press was laughing. And he was saying it with a straight-up face. Now, I need to play this before we go any further. Everybody, please.
Due to mature subject matter, listening discretion is advised.
Now, I have to make sure that the children are outside and the people who are listening have not been brought up in a convent. So I want to play this now. This is what happened yesterday.
Mayor Ford, can you call the ladies' allegation?
Yeah, you know what? I couldn't
sent a comment yesterday because I didn't read the documents that was released. It's unfortunate I have to take the legal action. I don't appreciate people calling Alana a prostitute. I never had a prostitute here. I'm very happily married at home. This is very disturbing against my wife. Unfortunately, I have to take legal action against Isaac Ransom and George Christopoulos and Mark Toohey. I have to take legal action against the waiter that said I was doing lines at the beer market. That is outright lies. That is not true. You know what? But it hurts my wife when they're calling a friend of mine a prostitute. Alana is not a prostitute. She's a friend, and it makes me sick how people are saying this. So unfortunately, I have no other choice. I'm the last one to take legal action. I can't put up with it anymore. So I've named the names. Litigation will be starting shortly. I've had enough. That's why I warned you guys yesterday, be careful what you wrote. Okay, so that's all I have to say for now. And the next thing, I want to call Mayor Britannia in Hamilton and tell them that we're going to have to spank their little tiger cats.
Now, you heard what he said. He was going to call the mayor and talk about spanking the little tiger cats. But now, that leads us into what he said.
The most horrible?
Yeah. Thing. Now, maybe I should play this one more time for the people who are listening, so you can get your children out of the room.
Due to mature subject matter, listening discretion is advised.
Okay, now all the little kids out of the room. I mean, we are adults. We are adults.
Almost.
Okay, well, we can listen to things.
Hey, if it's good enough for the mayor,
it's
good enough for everyone.
As Michael Corleone's brother said, I'm smart. I mean, we can. Now, this is what he was talking about, this friend of his, quote, friend of his, just because he gave her $100 bills in a sack, she's still a friend. Okay, now, I added that part. I don't know, but this is what they say. She's not a prostitute. Then he came out and said this.
Oh, and the last thing was Olivia Gondak. It says that I wanted to eat her pussy, Olivia Gondak. I've never said that in my life to her. I would never do that. I'm happily married. I've got more than enough to eat at home. Thank you very much.
I know we're up live right now, but I don't know if we can. Mayor Ford speaking as Mayor Ford does very plainly, as he said in council yesterday, he effed up, and now using language that I don't think we can broadcast that on TV, but we just broadcast that on TV. Another unbelievable day here at Toronto City Council.
You see?
Now, this is what he then came out about 2 hours later with his wife standing next to him.
Right.
It's
not embarrassing enough to have all this happening and have her humiliated day after day on the radio.
He's got to bring around and humiliate her.
Right here, honey.
You know, this sort of reminds me of David Bitter.
Well, you know what? He's only got so many hands. If somebody has to hold the crack pipe,
that's
now he's apologizing.
Someone's got to hold the crack pipe and somebody else has got to hold the bottle of bourbon while he's got the girl.
And apparently, and apparently the really big kitty cat that he carries.
Yes, the big kitty cat. So then he came out, brought his wife out there, and said this.
Today, I acted on complete impulse in my remarks.
See? Again.
No, listen. This was said.
Have you purchased illegal drugs in the last 2 years?
Big word?
Yes, I have.
He had to think about it.
Right.
He was really thinking, what? Is there tape?
Is there?
Is this a setup? Is there more tape? So then he had to admit it.
No. No. What? The city council today, as I said, has removed some of his powers and given them to the deputy mayor. He said that he is now going to fight this because he does not want that to happen to the next mayor, provided we elect another crack-smoking, drug addict womanizer. Picture this guy as a womanizer.
You know what he looks like? You know, there's somebody else he reminds me of that is often blowing off on the radio and saying horrible things.
Oh.
And that would be our boy Rush. Another drug addict.
Let me tell you, I don't know how come you said that. Yesterday, I was showing my daughter and my wife. It was my daughter, not my wife. I was showing her this clip. My grandson, the little one, Blake, he was in here looking at the clip of him, and he says, "Is that Rush Limbaugh?" I said, "He does the same thing. He's a crack addict.
He gets caught with the drugs. He gets caught with the women. He gets caught.
He's had 15 wives.
Horrible thing.
He's had 15 wives already. So this has been. I mean, it is unbelievable." It is unbelievable.
Well, here's my moment of talk about better people. Here's an example.
Yes.
And this is one thing that makes me mad.
Yes.
People who, you know, go and brush the whole world in black and white caricatures.
Yeah,
of people.
Yeah.
You know, ones that call, like, for instance, anyone that might be vaguely Islamic in faith a terrorist, you know, or anyone that is has an ounce of African blood is somehow a retarded savage in the jungle, you know, and the Chinese are all taking over the world with their evil, maniacal, cackling plan to subject white people to eternal servitude, right? Instead, how about this? 19-year-old Aisha Mustafa from Egypt, a girl student. We should have more of these. She's a physicist who devised a new type of propulsion system based on quantum theories, which revolutionized all propulsion systems. Now, they have the ability to propel space probes and artificial satellites with no fuel whatsoever.
So are you trying to say that we can use that to get him off this planet?
No, I'm just saying these are better people we could be talking about. Here's one. Angela Zhang is a 17-year-old Chinese schoolgirl.
Yeah.
She created an advanced nanotech particle that attacks and kills cancer. Why don't we invest in education and invest in human rights and protecting people and promoting people and have more of this and less of these people who sit up on their thrones
and
snorting,
it's a big throne for him. Right.
You know, drugs and inhaling food like it's water until they blow up like a nova. And just why in the West do we waste our time, effort, energy, and money on corruption, lies, BS like this crap?
Because we are the we are the intelligent. Remember, that's the third whale. That's the third whale. That's the third world. They don't know nothing.
Yeah,
they don't know what we told them. That's the third world. China, India, third world.
Right.
They're hungry there.
Right.
Not saying the people down the street don't have food either.
Saying
the people down the street don't have health care.
You know,
not saying people on the street have a junk health care system that they're paying into that the first time they get sick, they don't have health care anymore. Not saying that.
Yeah.
I mean, but he said, "I'm a happily married man. I have more than enough to eat at home."
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said. And the first impression from my 5-year-old grandson when he saw him on the computer was, is that Rush Limbaugh?
Yep.
I mean,
that's funny.
Rest
that's
my case.
Yeah, the end. I mean,
the end. He's done every single thing that Rush Limbaugh has done.
But like this, but this is the thing. This,
but now he's going to have his own TV show.
Part, yeah, of course, and probably with the girl from Jersey Shore. You know, with the 40-ounce beer. The problem is that I get, you know, the Republicans sit here and preach family values all day long and scream about how
family
we have no morals
values.
And more, you know, Christ in our religion and everything. You know, we need to put the Ten Commandments up because that'll reform the country. And yet, for instance, you remember they get called their national convention. They're out at S&M clubs and everything in Vegas. You know, they get called doing all this shenanigans.
What's wrong
you know,
with that?
Cheney and them, for instance, you know, he was down there at the border. We talked about this earlier, but he's out there drunk on a ranch with a girl that he's supposedly having an affair with and then shoots a guy, and that's the only reason the news comes out. On his wife was out of town, and he was, you know, on a hunting safari when the animals were in cages. You know. But they go through this whole shenanigans, you know, with the, we see it all the time in the news, the millionaires who have the Roman-esque orgy parties for all the contributors to the political party and all that. And it's just, I'm tired of the hypocrisy, you know, the holier than thouness, these people who, you know, leer down at the poor masses and say, you pathetic savages with your immorality, be more like me. Well, more like you, you're like freaking Caligula.
But,
you know, it's disgusting.
But, and speaking about Caligula.
With respect, Master Wayne, perhaps this is a man you don't fully understand either. A long time ago, I was in Burma and my friends and I were working for the local government. They were trying to buy the loyalty of tribal leaders by bribing them with precious stones. But their caravans were being raided in a forest north of Rangoon by a bandit. So we went looking for the stones. But in 6 months, we never met anyone who traded with him. One day, I saw a child playing with a ruby the size of a tangerine. The bandit had been throwing them away.
So why still?
Well, because he thought it was good sport, because some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.
Amen to that. And for some people, there's never enough money.
Never enough money. And they just, I mean, we're talking about the Cruises, the Limbaughs, the Hannitys, the O'Reillys. They don't care nothing about nobody but themselves. And now we have the mayor of Toronto. The only thing, if you listen to all the things, the speeches that he made, every single speech was, I saved the people tax money. Now, I've been told by a clearly reliable source in Toronto that he was not from Toronto itself. He was from the outskirts of Toronto that was brought into the Toronto complex now when they buy out those, you know, outlining districts.
What we call it, suburbs.
Suburb. And those people were living, not paying any taxes. So now when they come into Toronto, now they got to pay more taxes.
Right.
But they don't want all this stuff that the big city has.
Well,
they don't want fire departments. They don't want police. But now they got to pay for that. They got to pay for schools. And he was
there,
from
Mike.
There, so he was elected with those people.
You know, with all we have that going on in Mecklenburg County, where all these outlying groups.
That's correct.
They wanted, here's the thing, they wanted the services. They wanted the COTS they don't want well water. That tastes bad. You know, they want everything connected and heavy, you know. But as soon as you get out there, you find out you have to pay taxes. And you go, what? And we've got that going on now. You know, the Outer Ring is suing to get divorced from our school district and everything because they don't want to have to. They said, we shouldn't have to pay for those poor schools downtown. Poor schools downtown, what? You know, it's just, it's greed again. It's lack of compassion. It's not caring for your neighbor, you know.
And
I got mine, screw them.
My belief is we will, in fact, be greeted as liberals. Raiders.
Yes. Because I've often found when I park my tank right on the rubble of Babylon that they greet me as a liberator.
Yeah, no, the rubble that I made.
Yeah, with a very smart bomb.
Right, right, with a smart bomb that was very smart because it killed all
that.
It didn't kill me.
Facebook the other day that showed a picture of the Kennedy boys, and it said, remember when in politics we wanted the best and the brightest, you know? Right. And then it showed a picture of Michelle Bachmann, Palin, you know, Ted Cruz, all standing there. And it said, what the hell happened? We have people who can barely finish sentences now.
Oh, I'm telling you. No, but what's the latest now?
What's the latest with
Palin? I don't think the Pope, I'm getting a little disenchanted with him. I think he's a liberal. What? Are you kidding me?
You know, I hear that Jesus.
The Pope's a liberal?
I hear that Jesus guy keeps helping the poor.
Is that what it is?
And I even, you know what he did?
What did he do?
He even went out and protected some whorebag prostitutes from, like, being stoned and
did
stuff.
He?
And then said, you know, she's one of us.
Don't do it again.
What a liberal, horrible thing.
Well, the thing is,
next thing you know, he'll be handed out wine, like an alcoholic,
and fish, and loaves of bread.
Hey, we're talking
and he's doing it like that magician Blaine. He's making it up for nothing. Where's he getting the whole cloth? Where's he doing this stuff?
It must be some kind of magic
or something.
They don't want to hear about fish. They only want to talk about cat.
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely correct. All you can eat is cat. That's
cat
right. And then you got this moron like the coffee boy Raleigh, Bill O'Reilly. That's what he was when he was in NBC in New York. When he started out, he was a coffee boy chasing. He was the one that did the last 5 minute wrap up after the weather at sports. Oh, by the way, we got old Bill O'Reilly. Where are you at? Well, I'm out here on the Long Island Expressway.
We got 5 minutes left.
And there was an accident out here, and it's snowing and it's raining. That's what he was doing.
Yeah, Mr.
He said that God don't like taxes either, because that's when God took those rotten, no good devil taxpayer people and beat them up and said that this is no good, you shouldn't be taxing people. Well, he didn't tell the whole story because he's a lying bastard. They were inside the Dagon temple collecting.
It wasn't collecting either. It was they were all the selling.
Selling.
Or hawking.
That's
selling.
Right, hawking.
They're making
selling
money
selling
off of God.
That's right. Say,
now,
right, you come in the temple, you pass by, hey, give me a few bucks. Here, how about this? He
now,
threw them out of the temple.
I happen to know.
Yes, you were there.
Even in this town, a few people who profess to be devout Christians who love to have the most stupendous, unbelievably vast mega churches I've ever seen.
Oh, you
that are like
the pink church
biggest coliseums in the world, and they're just chock full of things to sell and entertainment and things to buy, and T-shirts and bumper stickers and stuff that's God-horrific. I wonder what
with the pastor's name on it.
Yeah, in multiple colors. and you just gotta wonder. You just gotta wonder. Would God approve? Is this the best use of our money?
I don't think it is.
Which leads me to a point I helped post on your wall just yesterday.
Oh, and see, I didn't get a chance. You guys signal me that you posted
because
I don't get a chance.
Oh, I post on your wall all the time. Don't you worry. I just spam it up.
Well, you should.
but there was this factoid.
Yes.
That was very interesting.
Factoid. Okay.
It was this. Religious organizations in the USA last year spent. Here we go. One year. $400 million lobbying the politicians in Congress.
$400 million? I wonder how many of the Catholic Church. I don't think so.
We give them every year.
Yeah.
Religious organizations of America get a tax subsidized break on their tax exemption. $71 billion. That's their write-off every year that we give them for being tax exempt. And then they turn around and use the money they make to lobby our government to tear down the walls separating church and state and to make their will into law. So it makes you wonder, something wrong with this system. Because we seem to be subsidizing people who are tearing down our government. And you know, one way or the other, either you get no tax and you don't sell or do anything and you sit there and preach about God, or you're a big corporation, you can sell your products and make your DVDs and have your TV shows, and you can go and lobby your government, and you pay taxes like every other company in America. So which is it? They like to play both sides, and they can't do it.
Well, it's
you're either for God or against him.
Well, the reason why they're lobbying is because we have all those terrorists that are coming over to this country.
You mean like the San Franciscan gayerists
yes.
who keep trying to force their evil same-sex marriage on America?
Well, yeah, and the ones that are passing Sharia law
yeah.
in every single city. Mm-hmm. There must be at least 40 cities with Sharia law, isn't that true? Well, this is what one of the most intelligent people in Congress from Texas, you know he's intelligent. This is what he had to say about that.
They would have young women who became pregnant, would get them into the United States to have a baby. They could be raised and coddled as future terrorists. And then one day, 20, 30 years down the road, they could be sent in to help destroy our way of life.
And become president like that one up there. Their babies grow up to be Forrest Gump terrorists. What the hell? I mean, this is the thing. This is what we're dealing with, though.
Why?
Hey, here's one. How about this? What if a communist snuck into America?
Through doing those tunnels in Mexico?
This one was through Canada.
Oh,
but
Canada.
Snuck into America.
Yes.
And had their child and then raised them, calling him the anointed one, but raised him in a religious fervor to become the savior of America and take over and run as president. And then 30, 40 years, he ran him as president. But he was a secret Castro commie implant. Would that just be outlandish or what? That would never happen.
Man,
your conspiracy theories are on cruise control.
How? Now, see, I asked this question. I still haven't gotten an answer. How did he? Why would a Cuban, or how does a Cuban, never been to this country, get over here and skip over and go right to Canada? How do you do that? How do you even get documents?
The newspapers investing, they can't even find the exact time. They don't know how he got here. How did he instantly become a citizen when he was a communist terrorist under Castro? I mean, you know, this guy moved from prison.
He
Texas,
stepped a little bit here, but,
he's only apparently in Canada long enough to somehow get married and have that baby. And then he was here as a citizen because she was a citizen. In that interest.
Isn't that so? Was she a communist plant?
Or maybe just Agent Smith giving her assignment. I don't know. But it's very interesting that he worked, you know, with the black ops groups, we'll call them.
Oh, yeah.
And they went in to overthrow things and take over in Cuba, and then he ended up here. And then now they can't answer any of those questions. And, you know, even the newspapers said they were having trouble matching up dates, finding out when he came here, what he did, what his past was about. And then they just said, oh, quit asking that about my pappy, you know. But
so,
even what if it's all legitimate? I don't
yes.
even care. The point is you can make anything sound nefarious and stupid.
Oh, yes.
I'm tired of them all, you know, It's
like health care crippling the country?
Yeah, or like, you know, the all immigrants are bringing their, you know, terrorist babies over here to have them so they can infiltrate the country and become, you know, President Obama. You know, of,
well, but there's also another thing that they're trying to do.
Maybe part of the problem is we need to go back into the schools at a very early age, maybe at the grade school level, and have a class for the young girls and have a class for the young boys and say, you know, this is what's important. You know, this is what a father does that is maybe a little different, maybe a little bit better than the talents that a mom has in a certain area, and the same thing for the young girls. Marissa.
Indoctrinate people.
Well,
look.
I mean,
here's
do you think that's the way we should do it? Indoctrinate people?
Here's what I think we should do. Like all the Republicans, we should close down the terrorist training camps that are
in Texas.
The liberal,
the one is in Texas.
Bastions that we call schools in America.
Okay.
We need to close those down.
Right.
You know, send the kids to religious schools or whatever, so they can be indoctrinated. And those who can't get into the real good schools that, like, you know, our mother of the flying ruler on Knuckles, if they can't get in there, they need to be sent to prisons because they're going to be bad. You can just tell. They're obviously no good.
Well,
they don't have enough money.
Majority report now.
And it will also become a huge industry that will help the economy of America because – oh, wait, that's already happening. I'm sorry. We're already the prison capital of the world because a few years ago under Reagan, we privatized our prisons.
Yes.
And suddenly, if you look at the graph, our prison populations went from very low to skyrocketing. Now, we have more people in prison than any nation. I mean, Russia, China, anybody. They don't even come within a tenth of us. And we have more people in prison than all nations on Earth combined. That says something alarming.
Well, you see, now,
we've got even, like,
how does that work?
They were talking about,
if they're talking about communists putting you in prison and holding you back, and
we're
putting more people in prison
because we have turned it into a profitable industry. Now it's not the state anymore; it's private industry doing it.
Right.
So they have an incentive.
So you mean,
yeah,
in Russia and China, they don't have private prisons?
Well, the wardens and all that get awards for the more beds they fill. You know, they make profit that way. So you know, we've got serious problems.
But is this due to the communist Obama? I mean, this is what the question is being asked.
The need for you is to know what you can do, you and your fellow non-communist colleagues in the lower house, what you can do to stop these communist tyrannical executive orders laid down by this foreign-born, American-hating communist despot. What can you do for me?
Despot, you know,
communist born tyrannical despot.
Here's an example of that. Now, we have more people. They were talking about this on NPR the other day. They have more people down. There's, like, for just the subsection of African American males in America, we have more of them incarcerated in America, just prisoners incarcerated
prison,
in America,
right,
than France has population. I'm not kidding. That sounds ludicrous beyond belief, which it should be, but it's true.
Oh,
we have more people than France sitting in prisons, right? Now, here's an example of something. Louisiana, number one state now
in
America. Louisiana.
Are you trying to talk about them?
Yeah.
Louisiana.
On a map, and Louisiana is not even the largest state. You know, it's the state. But a while back, they turned the entire prison system of Louisiana into a corporation. Right? It's all corporate now. And
the government don't run
Louisiana,
anymore?
Yeah. No, it's all for profit. So they now have, unbelievable, now, prison capital of the world, three times the incarceration rate of Iran. And
in Louisiana?
Yeah. Just Louisiana.
Just Louisiana.
Seven times the incarceration of evil communist China. I remind you, not only is it an evil communist dictatorship, it's got 1.5 billion people. Louisiana, seven times China. What's wrong with this picture? It's because it's a for-profit system, and they can just, as fast as they can shovel them in, they can shovel the cash out and go home with their...
Now, but here's the question I got. If they're throwing all these people in prison, why are people still breaking the law?
Well, you know what?
I mean, that's a simple question. I mean, if you know you're going to go to jail, do not pass go. Do not collect $200 for going outside your house. Why would you go outside your house?
You know, ask the mayor of Toronto. I don't know. Sometimes people do bad things and they ask for forgiveness, like, you know, smoke crack or eat all you can at the kitty cat buffet. But say you were a poor person in Louisiana and you did something wrong. And the really, really, really big, really shaved-headed white that beats you with a nightstick doesn't want to hear your apology and doesn't want to say, okay, you know what, you had a bad turn there, you can go home now. Instead, he goes, man, I can make a huge bonus by putting you in, and my cousin that works there will get a huge bonus for having another bed filled in the prison, and, you know, Penitentiary Corporation of America will give us bonuses for Christmas.
I mean,
what do you think is going to happen? You know, so it is a self-fulfilling prophecy. And you know what? We also have changed the laws over here because it's so monetized that they put in politicians who changed laws that did things like this. If you get found with anything, even, you know, a little bitty, itty-bitty ounce of something somewhere in a party, you know, charge everybody. Equal possession at a party. You know, if you get found with any drug, you don't even get a chance. You don't even, the judge doesn't even have the discretion to say, oh, it's a first-time offense, or he's young, or he didn't know what he was doing, or somebody planted it on him. No, too bad.
Well, he's a
maximum instantaneous sentence, goodbye. You know, and that's what we've done now.
And now you can't vote.
Exactly.
What a coincidence.
You lose your right.
Lose your right.
And guess what? Again, you're poor, so what's it matter?
Hey.
But, hey, that keeps a lot
of people in business. Suppose you have money. Like you're the mayor's son, governor's son.
Suppose then none of that applies to you.
Right.
But isn't it the neat
thing? It only applies to you if you're poor with no health insurance.
Yeah, because you don't have access
to those
who
and
do.
And a part-time job.
Because imagine the niftiness of a situation where you've got corporations who can buy politicians to go in and change laws so that they can make sure that all the people who might think differently or vote differently or do anything else, like all those poor people out there, get shut down and put into prisons where they can never vote, never have any rights, never have a job again. Because, you know, that's another thing. You know, that big little box you put on under your application? Have you ever been convicted of a felony, or have you ever had a misdemeanor offense? Here, put here, explain. Yeah, that's
explain.
A guarantee that you'll
I was
never
framed?
Vote again,
that
right?
Wouldn't work, huh?
So you can't get a job. You can't pay for anything. You can't have a home. You can't get loans from banks when you're felony. You can't do
You anything. Can't get health insurance.
You can't get nothing. Chopped right out of the system.
But what it does
is it narrows down that field of people that can vote for that corporate politician.
So,
and it's a nice little circle. It's kind of like that, you know, you learn in biology where, you know, carbon dioxide and oxygen and water.
Right.
Oh, look at that. The plants are breathing. I'm
right.
breathing.
Oh,
we're all happy.
We're all happy.
Money.
Money.
Corporation,
right.
Politician, we're all breathing. We're all happy. Look at that bank account.
Well,
all the poor people are just being composted to make their system grow.
That's
it is a green system, but just not the green we were talking about in biology.
So you mean to tell me that these people are, well, we did have someone like that who was in elected office here in North Carolina. That we got elected.
Yeah,
who was a very, 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 very nice gentleman when I first met him.
Mm-hmm.
He was the representative for the 8th district.
Mm-hmm.
But then he went to the dark side.
Yeah.
And claimed that Obama was stealing $700 million out of healthcare to get the healthcare plan up and running.
Yeah.
And of course I told him that he was lying. But
right.
What are you
right.
going to do? He's
do?
Correct. And But you know what?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get elected next time he ran because we pulled his whole card.
Mm-hmm. So
he was getting paid by some of the insurance company.
Here's one of the things that I've advocated for a long time that we
yeah.
can correct these
pharmaceutical, I should say.
Get the money out. So if you, if,
oh no, we can't do that.
Yeah, but if we're going to go and prosecute and put people in prison and all that, it should be a burden to society, because that's the point. The point is, it's supposed to be something that everybody should participate in. You know, just like when you're going to kill somebody, it's got to be a serious thing. It's got to be a real serious thing. Everybody should vote on it. Everybody should do it. You should house the person, give them the pills, and then at the end of the process, they get killed or whatever. If that's the way the law is, that's the way that it shouldn't be for profit. You know, it should be the wall prison where everybody's rolling in money. Let's kill some more people. Let's kill more people.
Like Escape from New York and Escape from L.A.?
In the same way with all these things. These politicians shouldn't be bought and sold. You know what? Zebra,
well,
how about publicly funded elections?
Well, we're going to
all equal and fair.
Well,
right?
we're going to talk about this a little bit more, and because we have a panel discussion coming up here on healthcare and Medicaid.
Now there's some money.
And but just before you guys get put on the air, I just want you to listen to something that was on Martin Beshear yesterday with Michael Eric Dyson, and they were talking about how badly the GOP is lying about healthcare. Just listen to this.
Professor Dyson, first it was the website, then it was the 5% in the individual market, now the risible Reince Priebus, whose name of course sounds like a Greek shampoo, says, quote, the president has a serious trust deficit with the American people after his lies about Obamacare. The president is the problem. But hasn't the president been the problem all along for having the temerity to try and introduce to this country a healthcare system that might cover all of us?
Another adjectival modifier, unabashed temerity. The reality is this, Martin, that as Joy Reid has expertly deconstructed this thing, we're narrowing our focus on a few million people, not to dismiss them, but the 43, 44, 45 million other people out there who have no kind of plan. You have to have enough privilege to have some problems. Those who are having problems now have a certain level of privilege and buy-in. We're talking about people, for the most part, who don't have those kind of problems because they didn't have any kind of privilege. They had no health care at all. As Joy Reid indicated, they used the emergency ward for health care maintenance, which potentially bankrupts not only the health care system, but also causes a kind of financial drain because of lost work and other forms of unemployment that result from ill health. So when you put all this together, I tell you, listening to President Obama today made me proud and made me feel good, because here was a man who was willing to take on what is an intransigent social problem and a hard political problem, and then fix it with, I think, serious application of common sense and reason to a big problem. Yes, the healthcare delivery system in terms of the technology has been boffo in one sense, but ultimately I think it will, that bungling will turn into something that will be great, and then 4 years from now, maybe even a year from now, all of this stuff will, I think, be a marginal footnote to what is essentially a smooth or at least productive and successful healthcare delivery system.
Yes, it's time for Grace's Corner with Dr. Grace Leem. And how are you, Dr. Leem?
You know, I am doing well. I am doing well. I'm hot under the collar about this slanderous information that's going out about the Affordable Care Act.
Well, are you still trying? So where are you at? Are you back in this country, in this state?
We need to push back, is all I'm saying. We need to push back. We need to push back with this nonsense that and the media has bought into it. And that's the whole problem. The media has bought into this, and they're spreading all the lies and innuendos that the right wing nut jobs are spreading around. You know, and so we have to push back. That's
well,
all I'm
listen.
Saying. We've got to push back.
If you didn't answer me, are you calling from an undisclosed location, or are you back in?
Absolutely. No, I'm calling from an undisclosed location in my living room. So.
Well, listen. We have a question today because on the phone with you, I have two gentlemen: Reverend Dr. Ronnie Sadler, Jr., and Mr. Joel Siegel. You two gentlemen there?
Yes,
yes,
we are.
Greetings.
Well,
greetings. I am honored to be in your presence.
Well, and Mr. Siegel was one of the former legislative aides for Representative John Connors, and on his part, he helped in the efforts of expanding the Medicare benefits program. And, of course, our distinguished Dr. Ronnie Sadler, who's here in Charlotte, and he is the associate professor of Bible at the Union Presbyterian Seminary here in Charlotte, and is a minister at the Mount Carmel Baptist Church. And I am greatly appreciated to have both of you on the show. Mr. Siegel, first of all, can you please give us a little bit about your part working with Mr. Representative John Connors?
Yeah, hi. First of all, hello to you, and thanks for letting me be on the call. And I'm honored to be with my new brother and friend in the struggle, Dr. Rodney Sadler. My background was in government for many years. I ran homeless shelters in the District of Columbia. I ran them in Charlotte, North Carolina. But I was getting ready to go to a new job, and my insurance lapsed, and I had major knee surgery at George Washington Hospital, and I had applied for Medicaid, and turned out that I couldn't get Medicaid. So after knee surgery, I developed a knee infection, life-threatening in the bone, and they threw me out of the hospital because they found out I didn't have insurance. I had to administer my own IV and almost killed me. So I made a decision not to go to the World Bank but to develop a universal healthcare movement. And I worked about four jobs, raised some money, and I led the effort to re-energize the universal healthcare effort from Clinton, which is dead. Formed my own organization, launched the movement on Capitol Hill in 98, I believe, or 99. I made a speech in front of about 1,000 people, actually cried about what I'd been through my whole life living with a disability, uninsured. And I got very lucky because in the crowd was one of Conyers' senior staffers, and she introduced me to Mr. Conyers. And he hired me on the spot to lead his universal single-payer Medicare for All effort. So in short, I drafted the expanded and improved Medicare for All bill that had about 96 co-sponsors, about 700 organizations that endorsed it, hundreds of unions endorsed it. And the movement became so powerful that Senator Baucus, who was then the chair, I believe, of the Finance Committee in the Senate, in his press conference said, "I'm taking Medicare for All off the table." Once that happened, I shifted to the public option, and I organized that effort on Capitol Hill through the Progressive Caucus and Black Caucus and the grassroots, and we lost that. Then I shifted my efforts to getting the Affordable Care Act passed because there was momentum within the White House to pressure the president not to introduce the bill. So I led the effort in the grassroots and on the inside to make sure that the Affordable Care Act was passed. Now I'm in North Carolina to make sure it's implemented in 25 states, but notably my home state of North Carolina, because the governor is refusing to take about $15 billion, free money actually over 3 years, free, to cover 500,000 uninsured people. And I want to finish the job because I know what it's like, you know, to be thrown out of a hospital, denied care for sleep apnea. I'm bankrupt, actually, owe $100,000 in medical bills, credit shot, mother lives in poverty, and I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, but I'm very happy that the president led the way for passage of this bill. Now, I can tell you that Obama had almost no support from his cabinet, because I was there. He went ahead and said, "I'm going to provide universal health care to everyone." So what Roosevelt was to Social Security and Johnson to Medicare, so will Obama go down in history as the leader of universal health care. And I remember the Democrats told him not to do it. And I'm going to be open and honest because I don't work in Congress anymore. Senator Kennedy was hesitant about doing it, and my colleague Hillary Clinton was scared of it. But the president wasn't. So we should all love as hard as we can this president and get this Affordable Care Act fully implemented. We have 25 states who will not implement the Medicaid provision. Time for a civil rights, like Moral Monday movement, in North Carolina, 25 states. No excuses. Let's organize. Let's get it passed.
Amen.
Well, you know, that's absolutely. I don't know if you heard the first part of our show. We were mixing some of this in with our great Toronto mayor, Rob Ford. But I was talking about how upset I am with the Democratic leaders, the so-called Democratic leaders that are afraid that they're going to lose their seat, because this is not about them winning or losing. They were elected to help the people, country, and their constituents, and if they lose their seat over it, then they lose their seat over it. Are you telling me the people in the Congress, who every single one of them, every last one of them, is a millionaire or a millionaire five times over, is afraid that they'll be kicked out on the street if they lose their seat? I mean, this is becoming such a laughable scenario. It's a crying scenario. Right. It would be disastrous. Because these people are not working for the people that they represent or this country. They're working for themselves, for their own portfolios and what they can do after. Well, you know what? You could do a lot of damn things after.
I was there for 13 years, and here's what I saw. I saw about 100 members that were truly dedicated social justice activists, mainly from the Congressional Black Caucus, Hispanic Caucus, and Progressive Caucus. The challenge that they had is they were constantly raising money all day long, and they pretty much directed their staff to run their offices. I'm actually writing a book about this Congress, why Congress has not worked for the 99% and how to change it, so I can explain to people the problem with the machinery of Congress. And so that's one issue, was that the time that they spend fundraising versus understanding the complexities of health care policy or even the simplicity of a single-payer system is not there. Number two, if you're running every 2 years instead of 6 years like in the Senate, they are deathly afraid of losing their seats because they have mortgages at home and they have mortgages in D.C. They have kids. Rodney and I are both fathers. You know, there's all these pressures. But let me give you the positive slant on this. The Dixiecrats were afraid of losing their seat if we passed the 1964 and 1965 civil rights laws. But because there was a grassroots movement from the people who demanded passage of those laws, they were passed. Until we change the conversation among progressives, and I don't see – Ronnie and I have been having this conversation, and Ronnie, I'd like for you to please to chime in. Until we realize the power that we have in this democracy to change policy, to diselect or elect members of Congress, we are blowing it, because if we can elect an African-American president named Barack Obama in somewhere like North Carolina – we could unify a permanent grassroots progressive coalition, get campaign and finance reform passed, run our own candidates for Congress. That's what John Conyers did. He ran from the civil rights community. We have to replicate that 60s and 70s strategies of Ron Dellums, who I loved, who I worked with very closely, Jesse Jackson, John Conyers, John Lewis, and take over the Congress, take it over, take over state legislatures, take over the city and state. I know this sounds radical, but it's called democracy with a capital D.
Amen.
Distribute the wealth from the rich and give it to the communities of color and poor people and working people, cut the military budget, tax the wealthy more, and change the country. Until we start thinking like Nelson Mandela did when he developed the African National Congress, or Martin King, we're going to have endless conversations. They're very productive, and we're going to be pointing fingers at members of Congress. But we really, as Michael Jackson would have said, let's look at the man in the mirror. Let's look at ourselves.
Yeah.
Why aren't we unifying like the Moral Monday movement across the nation?
And let me just say thank you, Joel. It's wonderful to listen to you and to hear what you're talking about. I wholeheartedly agree that we definitely need to find a way to put a more progressive coalition together, to put a more progressive coalition in Washington, in Raleigh, and even in the local city council here in Charlotte. We need to figure out a way to do it and keep it there for the long term. And I think that the best way to do that is by forming those types of coalitions that you talk about. But this one thing that I'd say, Michael, in response to your initial comments there, as I think about the way congresspeople think, part of me resonates exactly with what you say. How can people that are elected to do the right thing get in office and see the wrong thing being done and say nothing about it because they're afraid of losing their own advantage? And that's a significant concern that that I have. We should not allow them to get in office and then forget who put them in office. We should not allow people to get elected and then become more concerned about staying in office than about doing what they're supposed to do in office. The problem, though, is that we can see from the state of North Carolina what happens when good people get voted out of office. There is a definitely a need to make sure that when we do get a good person in, we're able to maintain them in that position. And I think that there's got to be a wonderful balance that's struck between doing prudent things and making sure the right thing gets done. If you do the right thing, we have to trust that the people will support us. In this instance, doing the right thing would be accepting Medicaid expansion for the state of North Carolina. Doing the right thing would be making sure we fully implement the Affordable Care Act here in the state of North Carolina, and whether that means we have to develop our own exchanges, too, so that health care costs go down across the state, because it is an incredible burden, as Joel has just mentioned himself, an incredible burden for people to have to pay the expenses of Medicare on the limited amounts of money that we have in our pockets these days. We need a means of paying for this, and everyone in, without exception in the United States of America, the richest country on the face of the earth, deserves to be covered. So I think that we need to strike a balance between making sure that our elected officials do the right thing, and they should always do the right thing, and then making sure we support them for doing the right thing. Best way to do that, form that coalition of progressives that will keep them in office.
Well, you know, we have someone, Dr. Grace Lehm, who is the chair of the 8th Congressional District for the Democratic Party, and I want her to chime in on this after I make this statement. You know, the problem is, it's not keeping these people in office. You can't keep them in office unless people vote. We lost this state because we had an 18% turnout. Now, that people did not vote. And I say every single day, I don't blame the shark for biting your leg off if you're swimming in the ocean. I don't blame the lion for chewing you up if you go in the cage with them. I mean, these people, you know, it's the old saying, well, what do liars do? They lie. What does the GOP do? They lie. They open up their mouth and they lie. I can't blame them for that. I blame the people who did not get their butts off that damn seat and vote.
But why?
Amen. Well,
amen. I'm right there with you.
I agree with you.
To figure out a way to get people out there voting. I think we need to figure out a way to let people know how significant the vote is. It is the tool that we can use to transform our nation. It is the power that we have to make revolutions every 2 and every 4 and every 6 years. We need to make sure that we emphasize the importance of voting with every American citizen. It is not just an opportunity that we have. It is a responsibility that we have.
Yeah, well, I
agree.
So this is
Grace Lehm Galloway, and I'm certainly going to give my 2 cents worth. You know, as the chair of the 8th Congressional District, what we found is that in the past, the 8th, a little history, 8th District used to be considered a very, used to be strongly Democratic, big D, Democratic, very strongly Democratic. Somewhere along the line, it became more blue dog, and we know where that occurred. There's no earth-shattering moment. As to, you know, here today it was a progressive, and then tomorrow it became blue dog. There's no defining moment, but it, nonetheless, it did happen, it did occur. So what we're doing now, what I'm doing now, I'm the new 8th District Chair. I'm a progressive from the word go. I'm a grassroots person. I never wanted to be chair of anything, but I realized a while ago that if I, as a grassroots person, did not step up to the plate and start telling people and talking to people and encouraging other people like myself who are grassroots and who are progressives to speak up and to do what was necessary in order to, A, elect progressives, and then, B, keep them in office, then I wasn't worth my salt, and all I was just all talk and no, you know, no gain. So what we're doing now is again, you're right, people who don't vote, okay, you're right, we need to get them to the polls. So we know that this has to happen. We know that we have to get people to the polls. We know that we have to get educate people that have no idea what's going on. And sometimes you can educate them in large groups, and sometimes you have to do it one person at a time.
How do we get enough money? Or how do we get these people in line? How do we get a hold of the people to make them understand that they are the cause? Why this is
right.
Like this?
Well, what
right.
We need to do.
I mean, it's been 125
Mike,
years.
Mike,
so it's a little bit of a snowflake model, but it's sort of like this, okay? The patients that I see, you know, the patients that I see, I treat the uninsured, and I'm amazed to find how many uninsured people, and how many people with no money at all, vote Republican or don't vote at all. So what I've done is a little bit of education. What I am doing is education every single time. Every single patient that I see, I ask them when they come in and they cry because they have no money, they cry because they are going to be foreclosed or they're going to be evicted, I ask them, did you vote last election? And invariably, you know, right now it's about 75-80% will say, no, I didn't. I never vote. And I ask them why. And they tell me, and of course their logic is incomprehensible. But that becomes a teaching moment then. And you know, so it's a personal mission to educate one person at a time. And I think it's wonderful if we can educate large groups of people at a time. But sometimes you can't do that. Sometimes it has to be a personal mission, one at a time, one at a time, one at a time, and let these people then go home and talk to other people. And then, unfortunately, you know, we can't. I wish we could change that whole electorate overnight, but we can't. What we can do is make inroads, make dents, and just keep pushing. So I love Joel's story because Joel was talking about what happened to him and why he became involved and what he did in order to impact our nation and to make it a better place. I love that story. That is just, you know, that sends cold chills up and down my back.
Well, you see, but see, now I'd like to ask Joel the question. Joel, if that didn't happen to you, would you have gotten insurance?
No, I had no way to get in insurance. And in fact, I applied for Social Security disability a few times and got turned down. But I've told Rodney the story. I used to tell hospital executives that I was a millionaire, and I was the heir apparent to the head of Pick and Pay Shoes, which, of course, was a lie, and that I had a trust fund and that I did not need to pay. I didn't need insurance because I was a white guy with a law degree who looked like a lawyer and wore a suit, you know, and tie and all that. They believed me, but I should not have been forced. And I'm a Jewish. I'm very spiritual. I had to move to different cities across the country in order to get health care and say this, you know, these lies. Now, the governor and his colleagues in the state legislature keep talking about, we don't need to expand Medicaid because you can go to the emergency room. I have an $8,000 machine I sleep on. I can't. But see, here's the larger question. One thing I learned from Congressman Conyers, who you know, probably I think one of the best members of Congress ever that served, And working with the civil rights leaders like Jesse Jackson and probably my favorite mentor, Congressman Walter Fauntleroy. What the old guard did of the civil rights movement, what they do and did that we don't do, they used to get food in Mr. Conner's office, and they used to sit there and analyze, why are we losing this political battle? What do we need to do to win? And they didn't send out an email. You know, they didn't say it was real people on the ground strategizing, and then they would get it on the blackboard and say, well, what groups do we need? I need labor. We need university students. And then they organize, and that's what I did with the universal healthcare movement. I literally, with Mr. Conner's help, organized every caucus in the Congress, labor, faith groups, university students. It took us 13 years to get the Affordable Care Act even passed. But the question I have is, if the model is sitting in front of us for progressive change, and that's the Tea Party model, why don't we have a coffee party? Why don't we do what they did? Study their tactics, and it was very simple. They found 5 or 6 donors. They put all the conservative right-wingers together on the phone in an email list. They created think tanks like Cato Institute and Heritage. They paid big bucks to hire organizers, and they meet about once every 2 weeks, everyone, outside, inside, and they're on message, and they are kicking our butt, and that's why Scott Walker in Wisconsin, who tried to stop unions from collective bargaining, and why McCrory and 25 other governors said, we're not saying no to Medicaid, we're saying no to Medicaid. It's because strategically they work together. When I would broach these ideas to members of Congress, even Ralph Nader, or to grassroots activists, their eyes would glaze over. You know, we can't do that. We can't work together. And I'll close by saying, well, what do we call the victory of Obama? That was everyone working together, and then it falls apart. You have to maintain the coffee party. But you see, part of the American problem is ego and individualism, and you cannot organize like that anymore, especially with global warming, you know, destroying the Philippines. We have to all work together. And Rodney, I think, brings that spiritual dimension that says, look, we're all children of God. We all want the same things. The person who's for universal health care wants to see people have a job. That those people want to see solar panels being constructed. You see what I mean? But if we don't think out of the box and change the Democratic Party and start doing what the Tea Party did, I think they're going to probably defeat us in elections, especially that with gerrymandering and voter ID law. But if the people in North Carolina could start right in Charlotte and have that meeting, how do we win these battles for Medicaid expansion? How do we win the battle of unemployment from, you know, benefits? But, that's what I think is missing, is just good old reassessment and conversation and then action.
Before Thomas wants to say something here, but I'm going to speak to you offline and tell you how that is going to start, because I'm new president of the North Carolina Black Leadership Caucus here, Mecklenburg County, one of our main goals. But I'll talk to you about that off the air. But Thomas, you had a question.
No, I was glad to hear him say that. I think it's absolutely true. And aside from the fact that I just, you know, want to throw in a joke with strategery in it, but we do have to organize. But what I think it's so fundamental, just like we were talking about earlier, Dr. Liam Galloway and Mike both mentioned, it is just getting people almost in the habit of voting. Because the problem now is they only show up maybe every 4 years if the presidential race is interesting, maybe every 8 years if it's not interesting. But they don't think they have to show up to elect the school board or the mayor or the local anything. They don't think they have to show up for every election, as if it just doesn't matter. And that was exactly the opening that the Republicans exploited, because when they couldn't, you know, remain in power for 40 years after World War II, they got looking at that. Why? And then they found out in all those off years, they could. And they started going in and taking over small towns, small school boards, small, you know, city councils, whatever they could, and worked their way up the scale. And that's exactly the right idea. If you pay attention and vote every time, none of this happens. And we've got to make that point that the vote matters every time, because like this year, for instance, in this one state, we have effectively erased 100 years of progress.
Exactly. We've gone backwards in a one single election.
And that shows you how important an election is. So it's absolutely vital that we just erase all the – I don't care what you want to call it or how you want to do it or how you want to organize people to show up and vote every single time like their life depends on it, because guess what? It does.
And if I could echo on that, I think that we do need to emphasize that the vote is, again, not just a privilege we have, it's an obligation we have. I think we also need to reemphasize something that I think the conservative alliance has worked against, and that's the fact that the government is not some strange exterior entity that is coming to force us to do things, that we are the government. That the government is our responsibility, and that we, as we the people of the United States of America, are the ones who run our government. And if we can actually get that idea across, then I think voting will become something that we do much more regularly. Voting will be something that is regularized to us. This is one of the ways that we exercise control over our governance as American people. I think we also need to emphasize that the responsibility for justice comes in as we exercise our vote and comes in as we participate in our participatory government. We can't complain about there being a lack of justice in the laws that are coming down if, when we have the opportunity to put people who will ensure justice in positions, we sit on our couches, we refuse to get up, we refuse to get into the larger game.
Well, you know, one of the things that people keep telling me, well, you know, you keep talking about New York, why don't you go back to New York? Well, you know, it's the one thing. We voted in New York.
Amen.
I mean, it didn't matter if there was snow up to our daggone knees, we went out and voted. I lived in a community, East Elmhurst, New York, Queens, larger than Charlotte. And my district in East Elmhurst was 95% registered and voted at about 97%. So when I came here, and the first time I went to a political meeting, they were praising, they was, oh, this was a great turnout. They voted at 33%. I said, what are you people cheering about? Are you kidding me? This is a complete laugh if it wasn't so sad. I mean, they think 33% is a fabulous turnout. How the hell can they think this? This is the mentality. It drives me insane. And the people, like Dr. Leem said, you know, the excuses they gave me why they didn't vote, and then they here see me at a free clinic, just don't comprehend. Don't compute.
Can I add to that point? I just want to say one thing. I've been working in the Democratic Party. I'm 54. I've been working on the Democratic Party since I'm 16 years old. Cut my teeth on the Harvey Gantt campaigns. A guy named Don Baker taught me everything that I know. Unfortunately, he passed the cancer. The Democratic Party, there's only two parties. There's the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party is closest to my values, so that's why I work in the Democratic Party. But having run congressional campaigns in other states and having worked within the, you know, with Terry McAuliffe, and who was wonderful, by the way, the problem with the Democratic Party, it's basically a fundraising machine without a real grassroots infrastructure or apparatus. And the only way to change that, I co-founded a group called Progressive Democrats of America, the PDA, with a guy named Jim Carpenter. We, who are progressives, have to start going to these Democratic precinct committee meetings. And we have to bring in our progressives. Yeah, and what progressives on the left have done, especially on the left, they, especially the Greens did it, you know, the Democratic Party or sellouts. I'm like, well, who would you rather have, Newt Gingrich, president, or Obama? So please, you know, don't even go there. But
if you have only 10 or 15 people going to a Democratic precinct meeting, what has to happen is progressives and young people and communities of color, that same Obama coalition, got to start going to those meetings. And then once there is some kind of a structured nationwide progressive Democratic sort of coalition, then you can really start raising some serious money and have a strategy that's not only putting people into the streets and getting them to vote, but holding elected officials accountable. But what happens is in other countries in Europe where I've actually lived or studied, their parties have an infrastructure. They are tied to labor. They're tied to the students. The Democratic Party is too insular, and they push back on progressives. It's like, well, we're the Democratic Party, and you're the activist. And I used to challenge the Progressive Caucus all the time and say, you know, we're losing our battles to the Republicans because we don't work with labor. We don't work with NAACP. We got to bring them in to our meetings. They used to yell at me, Joel, you know, we don't have time to do that. And I say, well, the Republicans, Eric Cantor's got time, and they're kicking our butts. But we got to bolster the infrastructure so the Democratic Party isn't just about a fundraising machine,
but also a grassroots machine. Joe, I don't know. I got to disagree with you a little bit. I'm from New York City.
Okay.
And I'm older than you. I worked for many, many, many campaigns with Charlie Rangel. Charlie Rangel would get up on a Friday morning. He would ride a flatbed truck, ride his whole district, yelling with a loudspeaker, get out here and register right now. Everybody up.
Charlie,
wake up until 7 o'clock in the morning. I mean, we used to, and one thing that they don't have here is in New York City we had structures like different clubs. Like I was a member of the Frederick Douglass Democratic Club. We were part of East Elmhurst, and we had a district leader in that. And what would happen is if we had a meeting, our monthly meetings, every single elected official that we called came to that meeting. If you did not come to that meeting, if you missed the meeting twice after we called you, you were in trouble. You didn't get the vote from that district anymore. And here, they don't care. The elected officials don't care. They'll go to their friend's meeting. But if somebody in precinct 243 votes or wants you to come to a meeting, they say, well, you know, I don't have time. There's no such thing as not having time in a meeting where I was when I lived in New York. Now, there's a major disconnect here. This is what I wanted to start here years ago, but they went ballistic on me, and I think Thomas was there. And what we wanted to do was we wanted to set up in each district in Mecklenburg County, we wanted to set up a Democratic club, and their sole responsibility was to get that elected official elected. Their responsibility was to get that elected official in that district who was part of that district, whether it be the 8th congressional district, whether it be the board of election, the board of education, whoever, or the city council person, whoever was in that district. Their job was to get that person elected. And it was not up to the Democratic Party itself. It was up to the individual. That made the people who were in Democratic clubs responsible. And that's why they needed to get other people out to vote. Here,
right.
The Democratic Party is loosely connected. If they speak to someone down the block, they speak to someone down the block. I mean,
right.
If the people have to have... They have to have some sort of investment in their party. If they don't have an investment in their party, it don't matter. I hate the word progressive. Please, we're Democrats. I mean, forget progressive.
Well,
I don't want to.
I like the word. Yeah, and I like the word liberal too very much. But if I can put my two cents in, and Michael, I agree with so much that you say, and I think. What has happened, however, is that whole, let's keep our Democratic official in office has been tainted in so many ways. Because what has happened then is that we have held our nose many times and voted for the person just because he had a D after his name. He did not, even though that person was, when he was campaigning, espoused all kinds of progressive ideas and all kinds of democratic ideas because he wanted to get elected. But as soon as he or she got elected, man, forget it. You know, all of a sudden they went to the right of Hitler, for goodness sakes. You know? Our job is not to keep Democrats elected. Our job is to keep our elected officials consistently Democratic. That's what our job is.
But you see, the problem is, though, if the way we have it now, it's such a loose connection. The elected officials have no care in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And see, here, every time, you know, I understand the democratic process is anybody can be president and anybody can run for office. Well, that's a bunch of garbage. Everybody can't be president of the United States. And it needs to have some sort of function where you can bring somebody to the table to be interviewed if they are eligible. I don't want another damn Rob Ford as the daggone mayor of Charlotte. I want to know beforehand what this person is coming out with. But today, all you need to do is pay $20 and you can run for office. Well, that is completely outrageous. That is outrageous. You know, and I'm going to go back to New York City again. You want to run for office, you better come through the Democratic Party, come to your Democratic Club first and say, look, I'd like to run for office. If the Democratic Club in your district doesn't accept you, your butt is out. I mean, because the people in that daggone club, they have their hands on the heartbeat of that entire district. And that's why elected officials come to their Democratic club meeting, because they know without them, they're not getting elected again. And if they screw up, you're butted out of here.
Can I chime in on this?
Go ahead.
I'm listening to this, and I appreciate the party sentiment. I appreciate the desire to see Democrats elected, because I do tend to align myself much more closely with the ideals of the Democratic Party. But for me, as a minister, one of the things I would say is that I just want people to do the right thing. When you get elected to office, I don't care if you have a D behind your name, I behind your name, or an R behind your name. I want you to make sure that you do the right thing, that you care for the people of the state, that you make sure that everybody that is that you're representing has an opportunity to be heard in the midst of the larger conversation, that you protect people's abilities to have their rights protected as laborers, their rights for health care protected, that you have their rights for education for their children protected. These are the things that I think are most important to me, and I think that these are the things that animate most people that are participating in the larger electoral process. People will vote for people who they think are going to do the right thing, and I think that we need to solidify that. And I mean, we could codify that in party politics. We can codify that in our elected officials, to say that if you are going to run for office, then you have to pledge to us that you are going to have goodwill and that you are going to protect our interests, that you're not going to sell yourself out to the highest bidder. There's this larger campaign across the country now, this Move to Amend movement. And I'm not part of this Move to Amend movement, but I think it's a powerful movement, because the goal of this movement is to take big money out of politics. And I think that's what's corrupted the process. Big money has gone in, it has bought politicians, it has bought elections, and it is somehow or another disenfranchised countless people, because it's taken the people out of politics. We need to reinsert people and the notion of doing something for the common good at the core of our political identity. Joel talks about the fact that I like to lift up this notion of the image of God. We are all created in God's image. We all, therefore, are inherently valuable to God, and therefore we should be valuable to each other. And I want, at the least that my elected officials will do, is to treat me like they're treating God, to do what's best for me as a citizen.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. And I didn't want to get off give the most conception here about voting for Democrats, because I live in New York City, and we voted for Nelson Rockefeller for 16 years. So, you know, he was the best person to help the people of New York State, and he was a Republican.
Oh, yes.
So, you know,
well,
I am not making a statement that I used to start off with my show with saying, just because you're a Democrat and voted that way your entire life, or just because you're a Republican and voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because, hey,
and
it's completely different now. It's not the same thing as it was 15 years ago.
And, and this is, Dr. Sadler is I agree with you. I don't want to be considered someone who pulls a straight ticket just because of the D after the person's name. In point of fact, I think Michael will attest to the fact that I've gotten into a lot of trouble with the Democratic Party because I refused to do that several times.
Yes.
Have I not?
Yeah, absolutely. We both did.
Yeah, I absolutely refused to do it, and it got to the point where there were people in the Democratic Party who wanted to, are you ready for this? Throw me out of the party. Seriously. And I looked at them and I said, are you crazy? This is a small D democracy, you know, and anyway, the bottom line is that I won that battle. And because that battle was won by someone who was from the grassroots, that showed me, and it showed a lot of other grassroots, the importance and the strength that we had if when we pull together. So the best term limits that we can think of is your vote. You don't like that person. If that person is not doing, not keeping up to their promises, is not doing what is best for all the people, is especially as the Bible says, the least among us. If that person is not doing what he or she needs to do for the least among us, that person needs to go. I am just as sorry as I can be, but that person needs to go.
Well, you know, I wanted to shift gears a little bit here and talk about Joe, which you are very much involved in the Medicare expansion. Now, how does that work?
You want to know how the system would work in Medicare for all?
Yes, correct.
Sure.
Correct.
It's really simple. You take the Medicare program that we have now, was introduced in 65, fully implemented in 1966 by using index cards because we had Social Security. So all we had to do was contact Social Security recipients and say, here's your ID number, here's your card. They were literally mailed out to people. 6 months, fully covered everyone. The way it would work is we would take the Medicare program and expand it and improve it to everybody. So instead of having a Blue Cross Blue Shield card, when you're born, you would be born with a card, Medicare for All card, and you could take that anywhere you wanted. Read H.R. 676, Mr. Conyers' bill that I co-authored with about 40 doctors from Harvard and medical school and former editors of the New England Journal of Medicine. And this is how it's done in Canada. It's done in Taiwan, Europe. It's funded through a payroll tax. You'd pay about a 4.75% of your payroll. Right now, you spend about 1.45% of whatever your monthly income is. That would be increased. And then we would tax the wealthy a little bit more, do a stock and bond transaction tax. So we'd take the Medicare trust fund and dramatically expand it. Doctors would remain private. Hospitals would remain private, but they would be nonprofit, not for-profit. So no longer would there be for-profit medicine allowed. That's why our healthcare costs, that's why we cannot control the cost, because we run healthcare like a business, not like a public utility or service. Full choice of doctors, all medically necessary services covered, you're guaranteed medically necessary care from, you know, beginning of your life to the end. It would cover long-term care. And then, I don't want to get too technical, but we would give hospitals and long-term care centers an annual budget. They wouldn't have to sell stock like they do now and have a 700% markup, which is what they have now. It would be nonprofit. So we would save right around, according to the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, $350 billion per year. You only have one payer of everything. You show your card to the pharmacist, government Medicare would pay the pharmacist.
You show up at the long-term care center, they already have an annual budget. It's the soul of simplicity. You go to your doctor,
okay,
you show them your card, they're paid automatically,
okay,
electronically within 30 days, and insurance companies would be out of a picture. They could be subcontracted to do reimbursements. If you're laid off from your job in an insurance company, you'll be retrained and rehired and be paid 2 years of a salary up to $100,000.
Okay.
And
go
that's
that one more time. Go over that one more time. But the insurance company, what happens to Blue Cross and Blue Shield and Humira and all these other?
They all just go out of business.
But what, they go out of business? They go to another country or what?
Well, it's a great question. What the way we dealt with that in 676, as Mr. Conyers said, we want to make sure they have a soft landing. The CEOs, of course, would still be making, you know, who
that's
make $10 million a year or whatever. I did the research, you know, from Congressional Research Service, and the question I asked was how many people are employed by private insurance companies, and it was between 40,000 and 60,000. When you go to a single payer system, because they remember they want to make money, so they're not going to hire too many employees now.
They
have to hire enough of employees to exclude everybody from treatment. Remember that, pre-existing conditions and right? I mean, you got
they had to say no. Okay.
They hire doctors and nurses. I swear to God, I don't kid you not. They figure out a way to exclude you from treatment. Yeah, everyone loves private insurance, but they can't wait to get their hands on it. The way I drafted that language in the bill to avoid, you know, vociferous opposition from that industry was that the first to be rehired and retrained would be those who, in the transition to a Medicare for all system, would lose their job, and we would pay them up to $100,000 a year for if they had not a $1,000 salary. I think it was for a total of 2 or 3 years, given time to get a job. But they would be the first to be retrained and rehired to do the electronic reimbursements. Because you've got to remember, there are billions of reimbursements annually for healthcare. You bring in 300 million people into a healthcare system through a single-payer system, then you're going to have even more reimbursements. And since they already know how to do reimbursements, just hire them and train them. So most of those people would be hired if they would keep their job. Yeah.
So then you would have to build more hospitals then.
Well, that's a very good question. Would you have to build more hospitals?
I think so.
America probably has, in terms of infrastructure, community clinics, long-term care centers. I think we have to renovate our inner-city hospitals because they're in really bad shape. But our main problem would be primary care physicians because there's a shortage because so many doctors who are coming out of their medical school with $200,000 in debt, they get a specialty care. Conyers and I wanted to introduce a bill to make medical school free. We did get something in the ACA, though, about providing primary care doctors with scholarships if they served in underserved communities. I feel really good about that. That's in the ACA bill. But we do have a primary care shortage, so we would have to multiply and our number of primary care doctors. Otherwise, there would be a waiting line. See, the waiting line only happens. And here's the beauty about doing single payer now versus, let's say, in the 70s. We can learn from the mistakes and shortcomings of other countries that did have waiting lines, like France and Canada had in the 80s. You only have a waiting line in a single-payer system when you don't have enough doctors and you don't have enough specialty equipment. So, for example, if you go to the post office and there's one person, and there's 100 people waiting, you're going to wait in a line. But if all of a sudden there's 10 people, you'll be seen quicker. It's the same thing with healthcare. But it would be impossible to have a waiting line if you have sufficient amount of doctors and infrastructure.
Well, you don't have you don't have nurses either, because my wife is a nurse. She works for the VA, and they're so understaffed, it's unbelievable.
The nursing shortage.
Yeah,
great.
You're right.
I'm glad you brought that up. We introduced numerous bills to address the nursing shortage. The last bill that I wrote before I left was to prevent nurses from getting back injuries. About 40% have muscular injuries from lifting patients. Mandatory to have a lift. But the other problem is that nursing schools they don't have enough money to hire professors. so they can't hire more students. This is because we'd rather spend more money on tanks and submarines that we don't use than nurses. You know, a priority.
Well, it sounds like, Mike, that you solved a significant problem of unemployment by saying if we expand Medicare, if we expand the people that have opportunity to get access to health care, then we can employ a whole lot of people.
Hundreds
of
thousands would be put to work.
And if I may address the nursing shortage aspect, remember, I am a nurse practitioner with a PhD in public health, so I'm looking at this from both sides. As the nursing shortage, one of the main reasons why, and I'm being solicited, I'm an associate professor at UNC Chapel Hill in the nurse practitioner program. I'm being solicited to become a full professor. Okay, I've been solicited by various and sundry nursing schools. They don't pay enough. They don't pay you enough to be a teacher. Okay, and then when you do become a teacher or a professor at one of these universities, you're not appreciated unless you bring in a grant for research. So now all of a sudden what we have is research-focused universities rather than practicum-focused universities. I preset nurse practitioners. They come to me all the time. I preset them. When I lecture at the university level, you know, what I found myself is that empirically the knowledge base of most professors is book learned rather than practicum learned. And, right. Yeah, so we're the people that we do graduate from the nursing schools and from the nurse practitioner schools, you know, they're becoming substandard, and that's a shame.
See, if we had a single-payer system, the studies are conclusive, empirical. We would save about $350 billion a year by getting the insurance companies out of the system, and we could plow that into our medical schools, into our nursing schools. Mm-hmm. See, Americans are so used to everything being private and corporate, and they think that's good, even though they recently bankrupted us, right, the housing bubble.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole history. Yeah, go ahead.
It's capitalism.
That's the number one argument that they'll say that's why this can't ever fly, because it'd be a communist takeover of America and the end of capitalism.
And the National Guard in the 30 cities that have the Republican Party would go on alert and would dare you to close down the insurance companies.
However, here's the however. Under our bill, the system remains entirely private. The only thing that changes is your card. It won't say Blue Cross Blue Shield. It'll say Medicare for all. Hospitals still remain private. Doctors remain private. So the question becomes, what would be best for 300 million people versus a teeny tiny little industry that has been acting like the mafia since World War II and gouging Americans? I don't feel sorry for insurance companies. I'm sorry. I owe $100,000 in medical bills because of them. And,
Well, what you're saying is absolutely correct, but you know what's happened at this present time? We have 5% of the private insurance people that occupy private insurance companies that aren't part of a major group, and they are screaming, we're getting cheated by Obamacare because we're losing our insurance. These are from 5% of the public who already had, as Dr. Dyson says, these are people who had the means to buy private insurance. They had the means to be better than the other people, the 47 men who don't have insurance, and they're crying. They will be the same people. Those insurance companies will scream justice, and we will have the problem of whether these elected officials will bow down and cater to them just like they're doing right now.
I think the point is that they're not – I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The point is that they're – they are not it's not because this 5% of the population is such a significant portion. It's because they can serve as an anecdote. All they want is an anecdote. And if it's only 5%, it doesn't matter. We're going to make it look like it's 50%. We're going to make it look like it's 75%.
Right.
Well, here's a just an info blurb for everybody listening. We've been talking about expanding Medicaid or Medicare for everyone, but if you go look at medicareforall.org, you can find out all about this entire plan, how it works, and why it will solve the American insurance and medical health care industry problems that we face right now.
But where along the line are we at in trying to do this? Where are we at along this line? I mean, this is President Obama, 70 years it's taken us to get to this point. More than 70 years, and they're still talking about it.
Well, where we're at is, I think what Rodney said, as always, on spot on, is that if a teeny tiny group of people with a lot of money dominate this corporate media and make it look like the minority is actually the majority, then the minority is going to win. But let's say if the single-payer movement, which does not have an office in Washington, D.C., I'm actually the co-founder of Healthcare Now. I started that with this woman named Marilyn Clement, who used to march with King. And you've got about 2 to 3 organizations on a shoestring budget. How in the world can a movement, like a single-payer Medicare for All movement, defeat special interests, have $400 to $500 million at their disposal to run commercials against these ideas? So what we have to do, if we want Medicare for All, is have some kind of a national conference, bring together all the people who believe that it will work, open up offices in cities across the country, hire 10 to 15 organizers, teach people in the grassroots in local cities and communities like I've been doing with the single-payer group here in Charlotte, how it would work, why it would be best for their family, why it would be best for the country, why it would be best for businesses. Just like Al Gore, when he did Inconvenient Truth, and he took a tour across the country. He said, look, climate change is for real, and it's going to take you down. And you have to have that level of, you know, you probably have heard me talk a lot about organizing and structure, and that's because it's the only way you can win your battles that are, I mean, Martin Luther King's SCLC and SNCC and CORE, those were heavily funded organizations. That's why they were so effective, because they hired organizers. Marion Barry, the former mayor of D.C., who I used to work for, he was the main fundraiser, I think, for SNCC. And you have to literally think of it on that level. It has to be as professionalized as, let's say, the American Medical Association. You have to have a lobby. Otherwise, it's just not going to move that far.
Dr. Sadler, how is it when you're at your congregation? Does this ever come up with any of your people about they're in dire need because of health cost and does this ever come up?
This comes up all the time with pastors in local churches. I don't pastor a local church. I'm an associate minister, and I'm a professor, and I teach ministers. But one of the things that I see all the time is that people that are in churches, pastors, are talking to their congregations about what's going on with them on an individual level. And they're finding out that the people in their congregations can't afford their health care. They can't afford to deal with the chronic issues that are on them without some sort of assistance from either a insurance agency or even with insurance. People with insurance can't afford to pay the high deductibles and things like this. So in part, that's one of the reasons why the Affordable Care Act will be significantly helpful. I went with a group of ministers to have a conversation at the General Assembly a few months ago with some of the conservative legislators, and I took these ministers in so that they could share with the people who are making these immoral and extremist laws what their own congregants were going through. And you'd be surprised how many people said, look, the people in my congregation are struggling now because they've got medical bills they can't afford to pay. There's a great opportunity for them now to be able to get treatment for their heart disease, treatment for their diabetes, treatment for their blindness, that's onset blindness. And now you're taking that possibility away from them. Another minister said, my congregation is going through incredible stress because of the unemployment situation. So many of them are unemployed. You're taking away their unemployment. And now you've got people with hypertension. You've got people with heart issues that are feeling increased stress who are now going to need medical attention but can't gain access to it because they no longer have their jobs. They no longer have the money from unemployment, and that's causing increasing stress, and now you're taking away the possibility that they could get a Medicaid expansion. So I think that in congregations across the state, just like in hospitals, just like in clinics, people are telling their pastors, they're telling their doctors, they're telling their nurses that it's too difficult for us to survive. We can't afford to pay for health care, and we need any assistance that we can get.
Well, let's see, Grace, how is it, what does it look like in your district, the 8th Congressional District? And I know that they, when they cut me out as first vice chair, put me in another district, they carved up that part of Mecklenburg County, but the part that they put in, there's less people insured, am I correct?
Yes, that is correct. That is correct, yes. We have an incredibly high unemployment rate in the 8th District. I mean, you look at Scotland, you look at Robeson, you're talking double-digit unemployment rates. You're talking double-digit as far as people who have insurance. You're talking double-digit as far as people who need help, you know, in any way. I'm not just talking unemployment. I'm talking about they're sick. You know, when you don't have money, you tend to be sicker because you live yes. in a poor neighborhood. You then have to buy the cheaper cuts of food. You have to buy whatever fills your belly. So, you know, you end up suffering more. And then, of course, if you live in a poor neighborhood, there's always that prospect of it becoming a toxic dump. For we know that that's where the corporations and the factories dump their runoff is in poor neighborhoods because if they go what the heck you know they're not going to notice.
Going to McDonald's as a toxic dump.
That's a toxic dump. Yeah, well that's good. But I mean I guess these factories and these industries figure that they're poor, they won't notice if their child gets born with a third ear in the middle of their forehead. What the heck, right? It doesn't matter because they're poor.
Everyone to vote. So
they keep the 8th district is what I'm talking about. They keep the 8th district electorate so not uninformed, but underinformed. They do everything they possibly can to make sure that the poor don't vote. They don't want them to vote. And that if they do vote, they will vote against their own best interests. So we've got a huge battle. We've got a big battle ahead of us. But
well,
we can
I'd
do
like
it.
I'd like to hear this this one, a little audio clip for a minute. Just listen to this.
Yes.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
The conservative movement, Paul Reinhardt.
Yes.
And this is just what happened. The less people turn out to vote, the more the other party gets in. And that's what happened in North Carolina.
Now, was that a minister that was doing that?
No, his name is Paul Reinhardt. He was the head of the conservative movement. He started the conservative movement in the United States.
He was one of the thinkers.
One of the thinkers.
Yeah, I mean, what disturbs me about listening to something like that is it's saying, literally, let's disenfranchise people. Let's take away people's knowledge of and access to their rights to vote. And by reducing the number of people that participate in our system, by reducing their access to the power to change, by reducing their ability to influence their own world, their own agency, we are in a better position. That's sort of the worst aspect of Americanism that we have out there. It is anti-American. American, but it is unfortunately part of our history. It's the same ideology that's funded, I mean, that has pushed notions of racism. It's the same ideology that has pushed notions of ethnocentrism. It is the idea that if I have what I have, it is more important than if you have what you need, and therefore I will do whatever I can to take away your advantage so that I can protect my own advantage, my own privilege in the system. I think that's precisely the kind of thing you need to put out there so that people can hear what it is that the progressive movement is opposed to. We're not opposing lower taxes. We're not opposing desire to have a more efficient government. We're opposing any ideology that takes power from people, that takes agency from people to give certain people particular benefit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. And this is this has been their long game.
Yeah.
Their long game forever, because they knew sooner or later that this power shift in who votes and who doesn't vote will start overwhelming them.
Yeah,
but
I mean, that's
if,
why they had the
right.
Southern strategy all along. I mean, they have found ways to leverage the system, and that's what we're seeing here. Let's be absolutely blunt. It's paying off. The only way they have the House right now, I mean, they got votes, and yet they entered districts and have restricted votes right across the state so that they stay in power.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Grace, we have with the president's the Affordable Care Act, we have people who are now going to be able to have their children on their plans till 26 years of age. There will
mm-hmm.
be no more a maximum lifetime caps. There will be you'll be able to go twice a year to get a checkup. The co-pays are going to be much different. There'll be no pre-existing condition. All this, and people still are their own self-interest to get rid of health care. Has the studies, these books, 60% come out of Texas where they have changed the of people in the lower.
Well,
is this affecting everybody now?
Yeah, well, this is a perfect case of the inmate running the asylum. It really is. They've managed to spread false information about Obamacare. And, you know, if you ask somebody if they approve what they think of the Affordable Care Act, they love it. But if you ask them what they think of Obamacare, they hate it. They don't realize it's the same thing.
Yes, that's right.
So what they don't understand is now, okay, so the president has allowed these junk insurance companies, junk insurance plans to continue for another year, some actually a little bit more than a year. And to me, that sticks in my craw because people who are insistent on keeping their junk insurance plans, they don't realize that what they're doing is they're paying a monthly fee to an insurance company for the sake of paying more. Because here's what happens. They pay, okay, let's say the insurance company, they like it because it's affordable. It's $250 a month. Yay, woo, wonderful. Except for the fact that the fine print says there's a $10,000 deductible that you have to reach annually. Okay, so the first $10,000 comes out of your pocket. And then there's another piece in the fine print that says that if you go to the hospital, there's a 60-40 deductible. So they'll pay 60 and you'll pay 40, but guess what? You still got to meet that first $10,000 deductible, then you pay 60-40. These are junk plans, junk. And they don't get it. They don't get it.
But people, and they don't get it because they, in most cases, well, we're talking about there's a difference between the individual that's got the private plan and then the plan that your company has that they claim is going to help you, which are junk plans, too, in most cases.
They're junk
plans,
too.
Why,
yeah.
And that's the reason why this was instituted. It wasn't, it, we knew we were always not going to reach, it was about the majority, the 95% of people in this country that have insurance, that have junk plans, and then the other people who have no plans at all.
Right, and what they're doing by denying the Medicaid expansion is they're actually putting people, more people at risk. Because here's what happens when they deny the Medicaid expansion. Okay, what the people that would, if they had agreed to the Medicaid expansion, then 500,000, a little bit more, actually closer to 600,000, 600,000 North Carolinians would qualify for Medicaid. Okay, but because they denied it, here's what happened. That close to 600,000 number of people that would have qualified for Medicaid now don't qualify because obviously there's no Medicaid. And they, in order for them to buy insurance on the health exchange, would cost them about $12,000 to $13,000 a year. Because that's how the law was written. Of course not. They cannot afford it. And so they will stay uninsured. And they will stay sick.
So they have successfully, over the years, tied everybody's health care to corporations. So if you're not beholden to the corporation, i.e. employed by Y or Z, you get nothing. You have to pay whatever amount for whatever junk plan that said corporation gives you, and that's your choice, which is, of course,
that's
no
right.
choice.
That's right.
But they
created
a system. And that's one of the things, the misinformation and the confusion by making everything so arcane and so, you know, I mean, it's like with anything else, when you have to go through 55 pages of micro print to find out that you're being, you know, screwed over, no one can. And then on top of that, when you're given no choice even on the 55 pages of being screwed over, then there simply, that's one of the reasons why you have such great apathy and everything else is because everywhere you're turning or everything you try to do, you can't or you have no choice.
I want to tie some of this up here, but I just need to get a sort of a little more explanation from Mr. Siegel. How are we going to tell these insurance companies again that they're out of business?
I love this. I love this.
Who's going to tell them? As the guy said, me and the entire Marine Corps.
It's called the struggle. Amen. You have to build a movement and teach people and educate. I mean, there was a time where this country believed that slavery was okay and you know, legalized apartheid, but it took a movement and no movement because everyone hates their insurance companies.
It took a movement in 200 years.
Well, that's how, you know what, if that's how long it takes, I don't think it'll take 200 years because it'll bankrupt the country if we don't get rid of it. We have to get rid of the insurance companies because it's an unsustainable system.
Healthcare costs such a tremendous percentage of our GDP. It's absurd.
I have my first cousin, one of my cousins, second cousin, lives in Toronto, Canada. We had her on the show last week, and she says, I got no problem with my health care. I'm glad I don't live down there anymore. The thing is that she said, we pay a little higher taxes, but I don't have to worry about taking any money out of my pocket. If I'm sick, I call my doctor. If he says, look, go to the hospital, I go to the hospital. I don't wait for nothing. So, you know, and hey, right here, don't we still wait for things? I was trying to get a hold of my doctor's appointment with my because of my back problem. It took me 2 weeks. I just couldn't walk in off the street and see him. 2 weeks, and that was fast because I was in pain.
11 miles on US 74
West. Somebody has some noise coming in on the phone.
Okay.
But if I could say, though, I think I love what Joel is saying, that we need to move towards the single-payer type system. We need to move towards something like Medicare for All, so that all Americans will eventually be covered. All Americans will be able to get the treatment they need without worrying about it. It'll save us all money. It will reduce all of our costs in the long run. And it doesn't have to come overnight, though. So I think one of the things that you just raised as a concern, Michael, is that what do you tell the insurance companies? If we can begin to phase this in slowly, if we begin to work towards it, I think we can gradually move towards a much better system. So right now the primary concern in the state of North Carolina is we have 500,000 slots in Medicaid expansion that are being denied, more than 500,000. How do we begin to work on this initial issue? And once we win this issue, how do we begin to work on the next issue? And I think the more that we begin to expand this, the more the Affordable Care Act becomes the norm for our country, people become treated, they see that it works, the more likely it is that we can move towards that larger system that will be the true single-payer system, the single card you pull out of your pocket, you get your prescriptions, you get your clinic, you get your hospital, you get everything taken care of, and we have a system that truly is worthy of being called an American system.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I really appreciate it having – we're about up, and I hold you guys on the phone long enough, but this is information that needs to come out. And, we're going to – you know, I'm so sick and tired of hearing about, well, gee whiz, he's trying to get health insurance for 47 million people. How come it couldn't be done in 6 weeks? Well, you know, one question I haven't gotten an answer yet. We spent $406 billion on the YF-22 and the F-35 fighter aircraft, and it still doesn't work.
And the military doesn't want it. And by the way, the military doesn't want it.
They never asked for it. They never asked for it.
No, they can't leave it like that.
They don't want it.
No, they
want it. Which one president praised correctly, the military-industrial complex.
Yes.
But, that's that entire other side of money that we need to reinvest in the country and not into.
Well, what I want to know is where was Darrell Issa calling hearings on from the Lockheed and all the other aircraft? Well, Lockheed's the main one. About how come they had the cost overruns and how come the aircraft hasn't been developed in 20 years? Where is his emergency meeting on having the Lockheed Martin executives up in front of his committee?
That's probably right there.
I think you're asking for reason. That's a dangerous thing to ask for in our system.
It is. Yeah. Logic? I mean, come on now, Michael.
There's one other thing I left out is that the insurance companies now, if they don't spend 80% of your premium on you, they got to give it back to you.
They got to give you money back. Mm-hmm. They got to give you some money back.
I know that's true because I got my daughter's premium portion back this July that they didn't send $99.97 check back in the mail. And it said, the first line is it, because of the Affordable Care Act, we now have to give you back the portion of the premium that we did not spend on your medical health care. That's what it said. It didn't say you were dropping. I mean, you know, so where all the – I mean, was I the only one that got a check back? No. According to the rest of the letter, they sent back over $22,800,000 worth of payments to customers in this state alone.
That's real savings.
So, you know,
well,
I don't hear you talking about that on the air.
No.
We have to understand that health care should not be a business. We need to just keep pushing and plowing that message through. And once people understand that healthcare, making healthcare a business, a profit-sharing business, is to me the equivalent of saying to some people, are you talking about death panel? That's a death panel right there.
That is a death panel.
That's a death panel.
Well, segment of the show to the privatization of the prisons, and it's the same thing. When you turn it into a business, suddenly it has nothing to do with law or any kind of punishment.
Or order.
It's simply profit. It's all about profit and how you know, unit you can process.
Joe, could you tie us up a little bit? We got another 2 minutes left here or so. Can you tie us up a little bit about what you would like to see the next steps being?
I think we have to start educating our own local communities about why we cannot run our health system like a business and just explain to average people so that they can really think through how they're getting ripped off by insurance company and then challenge them. Are you really afraid of D5 and going on Medicare? And I always do that. I always ask people in the room, how many of you are just have a dreaded fear of turning 65 and getting Medicare? And everybody starts laughing. And then I say, well, what if you had that at birth? Why do you got to wait until you're 65? But Americans hate their insurance companies. They like their doctors. So it's not like there's a love affair between the insurance company and the patient. They hate them, but they need to know another alternative. I think there needs to be a movie done or camera crews that go to other countries where there's single-payer systems so people can not be so afraid of it and understand it better. But I think we have to start by educating right in local communities so people can understand and demystify and not be so scared of single-payer.
Gets back to education, Mike.
That's right. Gets back to education.
We talk about every show. We just need education in this country and investment in education.
Dr. Sadler, could you tie us up?
Yes, sir.
Could you
I just wanted to say that. Yeah, I'm glad that we're being able to have this conversation today, and this has been an important aspect of the Ford Together Moral Monday movement, that we want to make sure that we bring back the access to affordable health care that's provided under the Affordable Care Act, because it really is a moral issue. What we're doing here today is we're taking away the rights of people, we're taking away people's ability to live and live well. So we need to make sure that we look at this as a moral issue. The conversation that we're just having is so significant because what we've done as a society is we've put profit over people. And whenever we put profit over people, we're going to suffer. We need to figure out a way to get back a moral governance, get back a governance that attends to the details of what Scripture says is the way we should treat each other. And only when we begin to treat people as though they're made in God's image and therefore deserve to be respected as such, only when we begin to treat people as though it is more important that they are well, that they are alive, that they are protected and have their rights protected, than it is that someone else has profit or someone else has privilege, only then will we be the America that we say that we are, that we strive to be.
Well, I'm going to make sure that, because I'm going to be calling on both of you in probably Monday to bring about a panel discussion for people here in Charlotte and through the Black Leadership Caucus. So I want you guys to you don't need to brush up everything. You got everything right there at your fingertips. You've been talking about it for an hour and a half. So I know you know a lot how to get across this information to people. We just need to get the people in front of you.
And if I may, I would like to invite both of you, Joel and Dr. Sadler, to the 8th District, because we are planning on a similar health care forum in the 8th District, and we have 12 counties in our district, and we need to, like you said, the education has to start and has to continue, and we have to keep reaching out until we have everyone, as many people as possible, involved in understanding what it means, just exactly what it means. And by the way, next to what you just said, in response to what you just said, Dr. Sadler, I am going to say, and the congregation said, amen.
And where are you from, if I may ask, Doc?
I'm from Cabarrus County.
Where's your accent from?
Oh, my accent. Well, gosh, that's a mixture of everything, isn't it? I'm Asian American, and I was
a straight killer in Vietnam.
Yes, I know, and I was brought up all over the world, so I have a kind of a cosmopolitan sort of an accent, I suppose.
It is wonderful. I just enjoy listening to you speak.
Well, thank you.
I had the same. I was wanting to know too where the accent was from. I thought it was either the Bahamas, the Caribbean, but I I also wanted to tell you that the next step is join the movement that Reverend Sadler and myself and lots of activists in the city of Charlotte are actually leading to make sure that the governor expands Medicaid now before people die. And Medicaid is a single-payer system. It's
correct.
A one-payer system. Yeah. Let's get it going here. And if we get 16 million people on Medicaid, that'll get us closer to a universal system because they'll go, you know what? That public insurance sure is pretty good. And then the neighbor says, well, my private insurance sucks.
I did sign your petition. I did sign your petition. So.
Well, thank you for that.
And
let me say, if there's anybody that wants to get in touch with us, you can always get in touch with me at rsadler@u P as in Presbyterian, S as in Seminary, E as in Edward, M as in Mike, .edu, rsadler@upsem.edu. And I'd love to field any questions about the Four Together Moral Monday movement or any questions about our efforts to expand Medicaid coverage for all the people that are eligible here in the state of North Carolina.
Excellent. Well, I will be in touch with you.
How can we get a hold of you, Joe?
Oh, call me at 571-344-1518. I'm a laid-back guy. In fact, I'm getting ready to go play some bass guitar at the Excelsior Club. So
if I get a chance, I got a meeting at 7 o'clock. If I get a chance, I might stop down there and see you.
I'm just going to play one song, Mr. Magic by Grover Washington. I used to be a professional musician, but I really believe in creating a community, a beloved community that Martin King talked about. And you can't do that with, you know, an elitist attitude. We all have to be part of each other's community and family. That's why I love working with my new friend, you know, Dr. Reverend Sadler, who is now going national. And but we need each other. We're all an extended family. We believe in love and caring about each other.
Yes.
So that's what it's about.
I thought we were supposed to lock and load and hide behind our walls in our gated community.
Right on, brother. Gated communities forever.
That's right. And we'll send you out with Grace's theme song, Dr. Ben Casey. Ben Casey's theme song. Grace's theme song.
Ben
and
Casey.
We'll,
wow.
That's right. That's what we introduced
back in
all
the time. That's back in the day. I was 6 years old when I used to watch that.
Say that.
Dr. God bless
Ben
you all.
Casey.
All right. Take care, everyone. Right.
Goodbye, everybody. Great show.
Bye.
Medicare for all.
Right on. And Medicaid for all until we get Medicare for all.
Amen.
Right. Okay, that was a great show.
That
was a great show. And
that's what a lot of people are lacking. A lot of people are simply confused by all the different crap they hear, all the dumb. You know, they don't know how the insurance companies work.
Are you saying that's how Palin got? She was confused because she heard too much information?
Palin was so confused she left home.
She left home because she was so confused.
Here's one thing that I would say. This is a meme going around on Facebook that I liked because it would also, I think, end. This is something you and I talked about before, connected to something you and I talked about. We talked about a long time ago, you know, you were drafted, you know, right out of, you know, college. Now, it didn't matter. You know, you're going. Get a gun and go kill someone. And we had talked about a lot of the war and everything going on nowadays would end overnight.
Right.
If these, across the board, we're talking universal, if there was either, which is not the preferred method, a reapplied draft.
Oh, yeah.
Or simply, like they do in some countries, a service. that you're guaranteed, like every person when they graduate from high school has to serve a year or something like that.
That's right.
But as long as it was universal,
that's
none
right.
of this poor people only, you
that's
know,
right.
Minorities only. But if it was universal across the board, we would see an end to war overnight.
Absolutely.
Because these rich people and everything else, that would be it. These politicians would quit voting for war when all their children were being drafted. And in that vein, there was a meme going around that said, don't you think George W. Bush, President Dick Cheney, Rice, and Rumsfeld should donate all their future income and profits to the Wounded Warrior Project because they created these wounded soldiers, all these damaged veterans that are coming back now with their limbs blown off and everything else. It's because they forced a war that we didn't need to go into.
That will happen if they go overseas. Because they will be locked up.
Looking at that meme, you know, it was a funny meme. It was going around showing, you know, wouldn't it be great if these four people had to do that? But I got thinking about that, and I said, you know what? What if you did apply something like that where anybody who votes for war, any of these politicians, if you vote for it, how about you have to pay for it? How about you forfeit all
didn't
your Colin
Powell profits say that?
And all that, right?
Break it, you own it?
Yeah. So, if you're going to vote for wars now, this, what if the politicians had to, you know, either put up or shut up? If it's a valid enough war that we have to go in, you're all in, and you donate your future earnings to the war, to paying off the dead of the war or the wounded soldiers of the war.
Health care. You think they'd ever... The communists will be sitting on our...
Guess what?
I don't know if we dropped on up, but according to me, we lost Skype.
But
so we're back in now.
All
so
right.
Go ahead.
Well, here's a joke to end
yes.
today on.
A joke to end today on?
Mrs. Claude Simmons, because she's
Mrs.
apparently
Claude Simmons.
A funny person. I don't know who that
yeah.
is. Just online. But there's a pigeon standing in the middle of a chessboard in a park.
Okay.
And the quote is, arguing with the Tea Party is like playing chess with a pigeon. Because no matter how good your argument is, the pigeon is going to knock all the pieces over, crap all over the board, and then strut around by like it's victorious. And that's
and they
the
get
same
shot
about
with a 22,
politics.
Right. Well, so it needs to be shot with a 22. No, you're absolutely correct.
So I don't know if they heard that earlier, but I was just—I'm dead serious. If you would make the people accountable, the politicians, I mean, accountable for the cost that they incur in things like war, and it would end. You would solve those problems. If you would make them have to pay a portion of their future earnings toward what they voted for, that would solve that problem. You wouldn't have any more of these crazy votes where they just do anything and then laugh about the debt, you know, that they incur on people's lives.
Well, you know, the problem is just like I asked Joel, if we're going to get rid of all these insurance companies, do we have to have SEAL Team 6 plus the Marines go to drag them out kicking and screaming? Because they will be putting up a major gun battle.
Yep. But again, if we could get there in baby steps, like right now, we just finally took a baby step with the Affordable Care Act.
They understand. Do you think these same guys would ever permit anything else to go down that would be looking like this?
If they shut the government down over
what's
the Affordable
that?
Care
fool
Act.
Fool me once, fool me again. No, you're not going to fool me no more.
I'm about to just say, hey, pal, we're going to communize everything. That would go over well. That would go over well. But look, there's a guy that you might remember from a former administration.
Yes, former
Robert
administration.
Robert Reich. You know,
Robert,
I
need to lift up my shoes, Rice. Yes.
I want to just read his opening line today.
The opening line.
Something he posted
okay.
in Berkeley, California.
Go ahead. Yeah. Well, there it is right
watching
there. Berkeley, that tells you enough,
watching
right?
Watching the news, you said it when we opened the show.
Yeah.
Watching the news with these freaking Democrats falling over themselves to run away from,
so sick of them.
You know, the Affordable Care Act. He said, opening line, Democrats are showing once again that they have the backbones of banana slugs.
Banana slugs. Not even a banana, but a banana slug.
And he just goes on about how they're fleeing from the Affordable Care Act and how they're spineless and da-da-da-da-da. And they're caving into this Republican, you know, fueled push to
isn't that what
it.
Ted Cruz says? And so, wasn't that even saying, hey, tell him no, well, we'll be up.
I agree.
I mean, he's absolutely correct.
These
guys, that's fine. And I know, Ed, you're watching it right now, but we got to turn down. I know I was looking at it. He listed all 39 Democrats that voted aye for that daggone Upton plan. 39 of them.
They should just be out of office next time. But and show them some real consequences. But
Major Owens, one of them, New York City. He needs to be gone.
Yep.
Now, what does anybody in New York City want to vote aye for? He ain't going to be put out of office.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
We need to simply, and to use that term, even though, you know, you dished on it earlier, but we need to make progress in this country. So instead of going back on anything, we've just barely, after 70 years of battle, got the Affordable Care Act, which is imperfect. It's just partial. It doesn't cover everybody. It still plays with the whole existing system, and everybody makes money.
That 5%.
Okay, but still, it's a step in the right direction. And, you know, Obama even said when it went in, it was flawed, and we can tweak it as we go along. But we don't need to undo it and back up and go back to the mythical, magical past where everything was peachy keen in insurance.
Let's listen to what Ronald Reagan said about these loophole millionaires.
Right.
And that's why this plan eliminates tax loopholes that primarily go to the wealthiest taxpayers and biggest corporations.
We're going to close the unproductive tax loopholes that have allowed some of the truly wealthy to avoid paying their fair share. In theory, some of those loopholes were understandable, but in practice, they sometimes made it possible for millionaires to pay nothing, while a bus driver was paying 10% of his salary, and that's crazy.
Middle-class families shouldn't pay higher taxes than millionaires and billionaires.
Do you think the millionaire ought to pay more in taxes than the bus driver, or less?
Warren Buffett's secretary shouldn't pay a higher tax rate than Warren Buffett.
Now, that's what Ronnie and Obama have in common. But you see, these morons don't remember Ronnie saying that.
By Tea Party standards, Ronald Reagan is a
screaming liberal.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
But you see, they don't remember him saying that.
They have this myth that has nothing to do with reality. They also don't remember that the guy was one of the biggest tax increases.
Thought you were going to say something else. But
he raised taxes
18 times.
Yeah, but it was like 7 out of the 8 years he was in office or whatever. I mean,
18 times he raised taxes.
I mean, and they all talk, it's the myth of Ronnie versus the reality of Ronnie. And, you know, I don't even want to get into, speaking of, heroic, Mount Rushmore-esque heroes of the Great Republic, the man who left our floating Marines in the Mediterranean as he went running away. There's plenty of things that you could bring up, you know, Mr. Iran-Contra.
But then you got guys this guy, Rick Wiles. What do you say about Obama? He's another clown.
What it means is he's not just a smooth-talking, jive-talking street thug that talked his way into the White House. It means that he was placed here. He was deliberately placed here as a child. He is a manufactured person. And the conclusion I've come to is that he is a foreign plant.
What a Rick. He was planted here.
He was planted here because he came from money. And the money planted us 44 years down the road when Roosevelt was breathing his last.
I said this a couple of weeks ago. But according to the Tea Partiers and these, Obama is a foreign agent. Guys, the birthers, they, according to their world, the Soviet Union is a joke. It collapsed. China is pathetic. It's not even on the map. I haven't seen any great Chinese invasions or coups going on anywhere. North Korea, whatever. that, you know, Kim Jong, Ding Dong, he's just wandering around like a, you know, an idiot. Those are all jokes. What should be feared, because they have literally infiltrated and taken over the American government already. It is in office right now, the culmination of their master plan, is Kenya. Kenya is the new superpower of Earth.
Yes.
Because they have 40-year plan that just overwhelmed everybody. It beat Stalin. You know, he couldn't do anything against America, and he tried for 70 years. It beat Mao. It beat Castro. Castro's
so,
laying down there on a bed drooling on himself.
So,
he didn't do it,
so
but the Kenyans did it.
So he shouldn't have been the Manchurian candidate. He should
be
the Kenyan candidate.
So apparently Kenyans are the most important, powerful, and feared enemy of America ever.
Well, I just
want to let you know.
Just listen to this. This is what else Rick Wiles had to say about the Kenyan president.
Mr. Obama has been photographed with flies buzzing around his head or attached to his lip or forehead. Each time I see the flies buzzing around him, I think of Beelzebub, Lord of the Flies. Beelzebub claims to cause destruction through tyrants, to cause demons to be worshipped among men, to excite priests to lust, to cause jealousies in cities and murders, and to bring forth war on the world. So think about it the next time you see a fly land on Barack Obama's lip or forehead. I wouldn't be surprised if Israel is covered with locusts when he arrives in Jerusalem in 3 weeks. How many biblical signs do we need to see to know that this man, is it by coincidence that a swarm of locusts from Egypt have moved across the border into Israel today, just weeks before Mr. Obama's arrival in the Holy Land? Tens of millions of locusts have attacked Egypt in recent days.
You know?
These are the people that are out there. Ladies and gentlemen, what do we have to fear but fear itself? Give me a break here. I mean, we got people like that. And they say, and remember, Ronald Reagan is the one who closed down the institutions where these people need to be. He's the one who closed it down.
That's why we have them shuffling around the street.
That's right.
About
so we're talking about the evil one. It must have been Reagan because he didn't want these people inside
the
street.
You don't remember that whole argument? Missed it?
Yeah, I missed it.
Remember? Ronald Reagan. There was a whole thing back then, man. I'm so old, I remember this. Ronald Reagan. Ronald Wilson Reagan.
Yes.
His three names. Six letters apiece. Six? Six? Six.
Ooh.
They called him the great deceiver. He could lie, you know, that's a great communicator. But, and they used to talk about that, you know, that
that's
right,
right
there that time.
I do remember that.
Gorbachev came in with the mark of the beast on his head.
That's
and they
right.
said that was all the prophecies were
the
coming
beast
through.
And
because you remember,
six,
was against the evangelicals. And he had that great rift with them. And they hated him. And that's why Bush, remember, lost all their support and caused him an election. And then his son had to go there courting them, or, you know, as we say, on his knees, blowing. But he had to go court them to get their vote back because the nutbags didn't like him. But, see, that just goes to prove that they don't like anybody. See, they thought Reagan himself was just as satanic and evil as Beelzebub Obama. So in their world, everyone's evil but them.
Everyone is evil but them.
And it's always the end times. That's what cracks me up. How is it always the end times? It's been, you know, on and on and on. You know what I saw in the bookstore the other day? You'll love this one.
And what was that?
One, the late great planet Earth.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when it's going to end. You know, they were having like the 40th anniversary edition or something with Alan. And the, what was that? That end times. That whole Tim LaHaye, the whatever, that whole series he did.
Oh, right.
So he did this whole volume. It was like 12 volumes, 15 volumes. I don't know how long. An endless series of the end times. Well, even on that one, they had the like 20th or 25th anniversary edition came out of the end times. Special deluxe edition.
Buy it now.
So, because it's the end time. You'll be able to buy it again. Oh, well, maybe the 26th edition you'll be able to buy it.
I mean, come on.
It's
ridiculous.
It is.
The same arguments, the same thing. It's always the devil and the this and the that and locusts are coming. Now, I remember reading that in the Bible, as a matter of fact.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. It just never.
It's a beautiful world.
Stops. It never ever stops.
Start living.
The thing is that what I like about this is that we all live on the planet of the apes.
Yes. And what we need is a little more Belushi standing up in the cafeteria yelling, "Food fight!"
Wasn't that what Ted Cruz was doing? Did he do that in the Senate?
No, I think Ted was like Needlemeyer or something.
Well, I'll tell you. Well, it was a good show today.
Yes, but it's Friday. Relax.
And it's Friday. And
it's not all doom and gloom.
It's not all doom and gloom, although.
It's always tomorrow.
What's the name from The Gone with the Wind says, "And tomorrow is another day." That's what she said.
Die another day.
No. Tomorrow is another day. Oh.
I'm sorry. I was thinking about James Bond.
No. Tomorrow is another day. So, what do I have on the agenda this week? What do you got on the agenda this week?
Oh, I've got so much on the agenda. Are you kidding me?
You have no. You got so much agenda? You don't even have an agenda.
I don't even have time to sleep, Michael. It's a nightmare. Now I've got meetings all over.
I got my flu shot yesterday in this arm. I got my shingle shot in this arm. And,
you know, all those shots going to end up making me sick.
At the same time. And she said, "I went to one on one on one of the other arm." I said, "Really? You're not going to give me a day to rest?"
She says,
"No, I'm not going to give you a day of rest." Says, "Okay."
Let's overwhelm that immune system.
Oh, yes, overwhelm this immune system
on
both sides.
That's why I practice the never take medicine.
Never take.
Just let your body heal itself.
Yeah, I heard that.
You know what happens when you get sick?
Yeah, well.
2 days later, you're well. That's what they call it.
I can't. I was thinking about this. What was it? Last night, I was thinking about what they were saying on this talk show network about. Oh man, you know, the flu shot is a flu shot that is from the devil. The flu shot is for the devil, and you're never ever ever going to get over it. Once you get it once, they got the germs in you, and they'll now be able to control you through mental telepathy.
Mm-hmm. I think they also put one of those little devices in your body so they can find you forever. You know, those implants.
Well,
you know, like
you did. Oh,
UFOs.
You haven't seen, what do you call it? The Blacklist. That's what he did to him. He put it in his neck. So he says, "Well, now you never get away from us." He said, "You'll never get away from the FBI or the CIA," he said, "I was. You think after 10 years on the run, I came in here to give myself up that I didn't have a way to get out?"
Well,
yeah,
here's
sure.
My only thought there, Mike.
Yes.
Like the lady told me the other day in line, this lady from, I don't even know who she was. She just started talking because we were talking about her little kids that were so sweet and nice, and then she opened her mouth, and I was screaming
that
out. I was like, "Oh my God!" Because she just out of nowhere blurted out, "Isn't it horrible with Obamacare?" And she goes, "Did you know that part of the bill is that in next year they're starting taking everybody's blood sample, and they're going to have your DNA and your whole profile, and they're going to be able to check everything, and they'll even be able to call you up and say your cholesterol is high. You're going to be on the national database."
Good.
They're taking over.
Well.
But that's why you shouldn't hang out at Walmart, Mike.
And that's why we have to sign up and say, "Have a great weekend," and how lucky you are.
When the news is all bad, when you're sour and blue, when you start to get mad, you should do what I do. Tell yourself how. what you are. When the fates are unkind, when your life's going wrong, when you're limping along and get kicked from behind, tell yourself how lucky you are. Why do you cry a cloudy sky, an empty purse, a crazy universe? My philosophy is simply things could be worse. So be happy you're here. Think of life as a thrill. And if worse comes to worse, as we all know it will, thank your lucky star you got this far. And tell yourself how lucky you are. How lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky you are.